Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because it is the third annual installment of our Friday night double features episode, which means I am joined by the man with whom I co-write all of the Friday night double features, Mr. Adam Riske. Hey, Adam.
F-R-I-D-A. D-A-Y night.
Very nice. That worked out
perfect.
Very well.
Yeah.
If you're unaware, Friday Night Double Features, once a month, Adam and I program 10 fictional double features where one of us will program a movie and then the other one programs the movie that's going to go with it and some trailers and then decides on the theme, and then we have some commentary. There's almost 40 of them. Go to fthismovie.com and you can read all of them.
They're so much fun to write. I hope that people have somewhere, this is going to be a rough evening.
Somewhere, somewhen.
We're off to a great start. I'm doing less filler words, but I'm inventing new words. Anywho, it's fun, and I hope that people sometimes take our recommendations and try out the double features
Like
let us know if you have, because I've done it a few times, and I'm just like a big proponent of double features. I just like doing double features.
They make both movies better.
They always do.
They do.
I usually will, and this is just me being like, I don't even know if it's OCD or if it's just being an insane person. But this, so I subscribe to a website called newspapers.com.
Right.
And you can go look at pretty much any newspaper from any point in history. And they have just online archives of them. So what I like to do sometimes is if I'm at home and I'm having a night where I'm not feeling great, or I just like don't want to go out, like especially in the winter, it's cold and dark and stuff. I will be like, okay, what, I'll look at, so I'll say today's December 11th.
Yes.
Today's December 11th.
Yeah, it is.
So I'll look up on, I have a separate website that's called Calendar 1950 to whatever. And then I'll look there and I'm like, okay, what years was December 11th on a Friday?
Okay.
And then I'll look up what came out that day.
Got it.
And then I'll go to the website, the newspapers.com website. So December 11th, Star Trek Insurrection came out.
Good to know.
So I'll look up Star Trek Insurrection, 1998, Chicago, Illinois. And then I'll find the December 11th paper where the movie section is in the search. And then I'll open it up. And then it would make sense for me to be like, okay, Star Trek Insurrection came out this day. What's another movie I could double feature it with that was playing at the same time?
Yeah.
But no, I'm even weirder than that. I'll be like, I'm going to go to the dollar theaters and I'm going to pick out two movies that were playing at the dollar theaters because it makes it even more random.
On Friday, December 11th?
On Friday, December 11th. So I'll just be like, okay, well, what came out that day? And it might be like, there's something about Mary and the Mask of Zorro. So I'm just like, okay, that's the double feature I'll do tonight. But then I'm like, well, which one goes first? And I'm like, well, I got to look at the grosses. And then I look at the grosses and I'm like, okay, worldwide, this made more than this. So that's the A feature and this is the B feature.
Okay.
And then sometimes you do trailers, sometimes I don't. If I do the trailers, it gets to be kind of a long night.
Sure.
So like I usually just will watch the movie. But yeah, that's a doorway into my mental illness.
I love it.
I'm almost afraid of getting married one day because I'm going to have to like tell these things to somebody else.
You just told everyone. Just play her this podcast.
Yeah. So it's just going to be great. It's just going to be like, can you just drink instead? Can you do something like a vice that's I can talk to people about?
This is why you're so much better at this than me, though, because you have you got skills.
Hey, game recognizes game, I guess.
Before we get into our double features, which we've picked from ones we did in the column, Adam, have you seen anything good lately?
Well, I think an appropriate segue would be to talk about a night where I did one of these double features.
Love it.
So I did, I don't remember the actual day, but it was 1991.
Okay.
And I did a double feature of Doc Hollywood.
Yes.
And Heaven is a Playground.
which I've never seen.
Okay. So let's start with Doc Hollywood. I haven't seen Doc Hollywood probably since like the early 90s on cable.
Okay.
I had a snap case that was clearly from like either 1997 or 1998 because it was formatted to fit my screen.
Right.
And it looked like it was stretched out like it was a blanket or something. but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And
It's a good one.
I liked it at the time, but like this just, movies like this don't exist anymore.
Right, right.
Where it's first and foremost like a sweet romance and it treats the local characters with respect.
Right.
And they're funny, but they're not being made fun of.
Right.
And I like it. It comes about it honestly in terms of like, it's not like Michael J. Fox's character is a jerk and he needs to be kind of won over by the small town. It's sort of like he was the small town guy pretending to be the big city
right.
guy. And he realizes kind of what at the heart of things that he wants to be in the small town. And it made me wish that Julie Warner had a bigger career.
It's one of those movies and performances that you're like, oh, she's going to be a movie star.
Yeah.
And that, I think she did a lot of TV, maybe. She was on, like, Army Wives or something like that, which I think ran for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember her from Tommy Boy, of course.
Right.
But, yeah, she's good, and her and Michael J. Fox are, like, a really good pair together. And there's a scene at the end where Woody Harrelson puts on his sunglasses inside of a restaurant and he looks exactly like Mickey Knox. And it's just like, oh, that's where it started.
And then Bridget Fonda says, there is no escaping here.
That would be good casting, but I would never replace Juliette Lewis in that movie.
No, you can't.
She's amazing.
She's not acting. No, she's so good in that movie.
She's amazing. I wish, like, when Michael Scott left The Office, like, Juliette Lewis took over as the new boss. And, like,
love it.
People are trying to leave.
You stupid bitch!
People are trying to leave at 5, and she's like, there's no escaping here! Did you put in a full day? Anyways. And then Heaven is a Playground.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if anybody can see it anymore, because it was on Tubi, but then it left Tubi
at the end of November.
Okay, so this double feature was on November 30th, because I watched it the last day. I was on Tubi.
Had you seen it before?
No.
Okay.
But it's based on a book written by Rick Tellender, who was a Sun-Times sports reporter for a long time.
Yeah, I remember the name.
And this is sort of like a fictionalized version, because like, I think he went to New York, and like this takes place in Cabrini Green in Chicago.
Ooh.
It's got a lot of like... Like, Kendall Gill shows up, like, he's playing, like, one of the guys scrimmaging and stuff. And then there's a lot of, like, NBA players who, like, didn't really end up as anything, like, Bo Kimble. But then you'll have, like, a scene where they go up against, like, Hakeem Olajuwon, but he's playing, like, a fictional character. It's very weird. But anyway.
Tom Olajuwon?
Yeah, exactly. So, Tom O. Yeah, it's, like, Irish, so it's, like, Olajuwon. So it's a very strange movie because it's a different movie every scene.
Love it.
It starts out where D.B. Sweeney shows up at Cabrini Green and you think it's going to be like White Men Can't Jump.
D.B. Cabrini?
Yeah, he's down with the system.
Cabrini Sweeney?
So, yeah, exactly. Cabrini Sweeney. I like it. So he shows up and he's just like, can I get a game? And everybody's just like, no. And then... There's a guy who was on, I don't remember the name, I think it's Michael Warren. He was on maybe Hill Street Blues. I looked it up on the day, but I can't remember.
Okay.
But he's like the lead guy who runs the basketball program at Cabrini Green. And basically what he's trying to do is make it like a camp where these guys can get into colleges or like, yeah, if they're in college, like there's like one character where it's like the first guy who will get to the NBA. He's like on that track and stuff like that. So you think, okay, at first it's like D.B. Sweeney wants to be Billy Hoyle from White Men Can't Jump.
Right.
But then it's just like, well, what's your story? And he's just like, oh, I'm a lawyer, but I gave up the law because I, and then they're just like, well, what are you doing here? And he's just like, I just want a summer of basketball. Just like, clear my mind, just summer of basketball. And they're like, well, why did you come here from downstate Illinois? And he's like, I heard the best players are here. So they're just like, okay. So they're like, so you're a lawyer, huh? Well, why don't you represent this guy named Truth? And Truth is like a college player. And he's on his way to the NBA, and Truth is supposed to be the next big deal. Victor Love plays Truth.
Okay.
And so Michael Warren is just like, D.B. Sweeney, you're a lawyer, so be Truth's lawyer and help me with this super agent played by Richard Jordan. And Richard Jordan comes in and, like, they're like, this is a nice office. And then Richard Jordan, like, comes from around the corner and he's just like, you bet it is, or something like that.
He's playing a character named David Racine.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's powerful, Racine, they named Sports. A street after him.
Yeah, it's Racine Sports. So he's in downtown Chicago. But he's just like, I want 30% to represent Truth. And they're just like, but the standard's 10. And he's just like, the kid's a wild card. I need extra 20%. And then they're always just like, they're like, I want Truth to be a millionaire. And then he's just like, $1 million player. He's just like, there's not many of those. And I'm just like, this is 1991. There were $1 million players. So, like, it doesn't make sense at all. And then Truth dies of a cocaine overdose.
Oh, no.
And then Truth. There's like, yeah, exactly. And then, like, Racine is a racist. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, Michael Warren's, like, blowing all these opportunities for other players. But then he has, like, random scenes where, like, a coach from Alaska's just, like, you can't hear the coach from Alaska, but you can hear Michael Warren. He's just like, yes, coach from Alaska. He's like, you need a player? Oh, I got one. I'll send one your way. And I'm just like, that's not how recruiting works. And then the guy he ends up sending at the end of the movie is, like, 40 years old. It doesn't make any sense. There's a character played by Bo Kimball who's, like, the guy who was really good, but he had a personal tragedy, which we find out is just, like, a knee injury. And then he's, like, now playing in, like, an abandoned warehouse mm-hmm, that's, like, mm-hmm. got a leaky foundation, but mm-hmm. also has a basketball hoop yeah, and stuff.
That's where they shoot Marvel movies.
And the funny thing is I was reading the IMDb trivia, and that was supposed to be played by Michael Jordan when what? This movie was going to be made in the early 80s.
What?
And then the movie got delayed and delayed and delayed. Mm-mm. Michael Jordan drops out. The director, I think it's Randall Freed, writer-director Randall Freed, sues Michael Jordan.
Oh.
He loses the lawsuit. In the lawsuit, he said, if it weren't for Michael Jordan leaving this movie, I would have been the next Spielberg.
This is the only movie he ever made, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his IMDb right now. He made one movie.
This movie is nuts. It is sort of, it's all bad.
Okay.
But, like, it's very watchable, very entertaining. It ends with, like, D.B. Sweeney, like, deciding to co-run
the
this,
Chicago Dogs.
Exactly. Like, co-run this basketball program. I don't know how anybody makes any money from this situation. It's a thing.
It's currently streaming on something called Fubo.
I've heard of Fubo.
It shows up every time I, like, search on Just Watch.
Yeah.
It's $75 a month.
For Fubo?
I think it also gives you hand jobs. I don't know what the hell Fubo is, but it's $75 a month.
It sounds like the name of a cult. It's just like, I've got all this money locked into Fubo right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to eBay it.
Sure. Probably a cheaper way to go. You could probably buy like 75 copies of it on eBay.
I think it's on YouTube.
For the price of one Fubo month.
Yeah. See if it's on YouTube. Also. Okay. Anyways. So that was a hell of a double feature.
Yeah.
I watched two new Anne Hathaway movies.
Okay.
One I liked.
I know. Oh, I forgot the title of the other one, but I know the other one. Yes. It is on YouTube, everyone.
Okay, good.
Posted by something called the Houston Rockets.
Really?
I don't think it's their actual YouTube page.
this NBA team but, that Hakeem Olajuwon played. I think it's a secret Olajuwon YouTube page.
It might be.
Yeah. Thanks, Hakeem.
Yeah.
Okay, so I watched Eileen yesterday, which you talked about last week.
I did? Okay.
I liked it a little bit more maybe than you and Rob, especially in the first like hour 10 minutes or so. Then there's sort of like a development, and I found that less interesting, and I didn't understand kind of like how it associated with some of the characters. It seemed like a stretch. There's theories about why maybe it isn't a stretch, which I'm not crazy about. The things I liked about the movie, though, are I think Thomasin McKenzie is doing something I've never seen her do before.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Anne Hathaway is just like in vampy movie star mode, and she's really good at it.
Yeah.
I like the production design and the setting.
It's
very like specific of like the kind of New England mid-60s mm-hmm. vibe. I like just kind of the aesthetics. That like it's the director of Lady Macbeth, and
which I never saw.
It's that's really really good. Okay. That's better than Eileen. But yeah, they just kind of have it, this and like the Holdovers. They kind of have like this warm kind of winter feeling to them.
I liked the vibe of Eileen. I just didn't really like the script of Eileen.
Yeah, I thought the music was good too.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I want to say what movies it reminded me of, but I think that would be a spoiler.
Probably, yeah. So I had never seen a trailer.
Yeah.
I saw a poster and a cast list, and I was like, well, I'm in on that.
Mm-hmm.
So the development that you're talking of, I definitely kind of sat up because I was like, oh, we're in this movie?
Yeah.
But then I don't like where it goes.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted it to be Carol.
Oh, yes.
And it stops being Very Carol so, to, be yeah. to be a different movie.
Yeah.
And then I saw She Came to Me, which is the clear winner of the WTF award at the Business Awards for next week's column. She Came to Me. If you watch the trailer, do yourself a favor. Before you watch the movie, watch the trailer.
Okay.
Because the trailer sells a love triangle between Peter Dinklage, Marissa Tomei, and Anne Hathaway. Peter Dinklage is an opera conductor, or not conductor. He like writes operas.
Okay.
Anne Hathaway is his wife. She's a kind of neat freak, like Julianne Moore in Safe type therapist.
Okay.
And then Marissa Tomei is a tugboat captain who pulls into shore. And
if this movie came out in 1996, I would be like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, that's this movie.
This is also, this will only, some things that people in Chicago could understand who go to a lot of movies. This is the most landmark Century Center movie of the year. It's definitely like you would see an ad for Stella Artois beforehand. It's definitely a movie where like the Richies made it and like you are just like, do you know how people act? Do you know what life is like?
Every once in a while, Erica and I will be watching a movie and we'll lean over to the other one and say, the language of cinema is universal. Because that's the little commercial that played before every Landmark Century movie.
Yeah, it's like where you're like giving yourself a hand job and eating a Toblerone.
Right.
So the movie sells that love triangle.
It's a new award for business awards.
Exactly.
The hand Joblerone.
Oh, God. It's like the new Jimmy Hollywood. It's like, I'm Joblerone. Anyways, so Marissa Tomei sleeps with Peter Dinklage. He writes an opera about a tugboat captain. She thinks she's his muse. Will Anne Hathaway find out?
Mm.
This is the movie that you think is happening.
Okay.
Then, like, about 20 minutes in, they insert this scene.
This is all in the first 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, maybe not the first 20 minutes. But then they insert this scene, and I'm going to spoil She Came to Me a bit. So, like, if you don't want to hear this, maybe skip, like, 70 minutes. Because I've got a lot to say. So, then, do you remember the guy in Spotlight who walked around the neighborhood to see like where the pedophiles were like in his neighborhood?
Yeah.
Okay. So that guy, not the star, any movie star, but he's like, I think a stage actor.
Okay.
Very good in Spotlight. Has an impossible part to play in this because he plays a racist court stenographer who is the father of a teenage girl who's 16, who is the daughter of a cleaning woman who just so happens to be the cleaning woman of Anne Hathaway and Peter Dinklage. This is important because the teenage girl who's 16 starts having a sexual relationship with the 18-year-old son of Anne Hathaway, who is Peter Dinklage's stepson.
Got it.
The son is African-American.
Okay.
That's the racist thing, because, like, the guy from Spotlight doesn't like him partially because of that. Then also, because the cleaning woman is cleaning his bedroom, she finds Polaroids of them in bed together.
Mm-hmm,
so she takes them out of the house. She shows it to Spotlight. Spotlight is just like, this is statutory rape. And I know people because I'm a court stenographer, and I'm going to ruin this boy's life. I'm going to get him arrested.
I'm going to type the whole thing up.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you think, like, this is going to be dealt with, not comedically, but in a way that's not hardcore. But this movie takes it very seriously, where it's just like, this guy is a menace. So, like, he will clearly ruin this boy's life. So, there's never a scene where Anne Hathaway and Peter Dinklage are just like, can we sit down with you and talk about this? Like, we understand. She's 16. He's 18. Maybe. What if we promise that they'll break up? Like, can you drop the charges if we just promise to keep them apart? Which is, I think, what most parents would probably do, or at least talk to the guy. They never have this conversation. They start talking to lawyers, all this stuff like that. So they're talking to the lawyer, and then Peter Dinklage is just like, I think it's Peter Dinklage. Or no, somebody says, like, well, what if they just get married?
Sure.
Which makes no sense, because they've been together for, like, I don't know. She's 16 and he's 18. So what can it be? A year at most?
Right.
I don't know. So they're just like, well, let's get married. So then it's like, turns into Transformers 4 with the Romeo and Juliet laws. So, like, there's a scene where they're both on their laptops on Zoom, and they're just like, well, what states could we get married in? And then they look up, like, New Hampshire, and they're just like, you could get married there when you're 14, but you have to be pregnant. And they're like, ew, that's gross. Judgy, judgy, judgy. Which, yes, judgy, judgy, judgy. But you're not in the position to judge because you did something that's just, like, a little left of center better than that. So they're just like, okay, we're getting married. So Peter Dinklage is just like, okay, well, I'm going to help you with whatever you need with this situation. So the boy's like, okay. So then the dad is like, they finally win over cleaning lady mother.
Okay.
And she's like, I want to whisk you away from Spotlight because he's a menace, and we'll find a way to get you two married, but you have to go to they have to go to Delaware to get the marriage, and they're in New York. And and then Peter Dinklage is just like, well, Spotlight has land and air covered, so we can do it by sea. Enter tugboat captain Marissa Tomei.
Gosh.
So Marissa Tomei's tugboat captain tugs them from New York to Delaware. En route to Delaware, they're just like, well, you're a ship captain. Couldn't you be ordained to wed us on the ship and stuff like that? And she's just like, well, I'm not ordained. And they're just like, well, it takes 24 hours online. And she's like, I'm into it. And then everybody's like, yay. So then they get married in Delaware and stuff. Meanwhile, you might ask, where's Anne Hathaway in this whole situation?
Sure.
Anne Hathaway decides to become a nun. And at the end of the movie, they're watching an opera about the star-crossed lovers.
Right.
And they scan the entire row. Spotlight's not there, but they scan the entire row. Everybody's very moved.
Well, yeah.
And then the last person we land on is Anne Hathaway, and she's a nun. She's full nun.
Yeah.
And this movie is fucking insane, and it ends with, like, a Bruce Springsteen song that was nominated for a Golden Globe. So Eileen was not nominated for a Golden Globe, but She Came to Me was nominated for a Golden Globe. Watch this movie.
No, don't.
Just to justify that, like, I saw what I saw.
So my jaw dropped a few minutes into the plot description, not just because of what you were saying, but because I pulled it up on IMDb and saw that it was written and directed by Rebecca Miller.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis, his wife.
Holy
who's, like,
shit.
Has, yeah, done a lot of stuff.
And, like, made some decent movies before.
Yeah.
And some movies that were not great.
Yeah, I can't think of any that, like, stand out for me, but I know that she's...
I mean, I like Personal Velocity. Maggie's Plan isn't the worst.
If Spotlight catches up with him, it'll be a Terminal Velocity.
But I just can't, knowing what I know about Rebecca Miller, She's married to the most humorless man on the planet, I think. What little I know about.
He built the tugboat for this movie.
Day-Lewis. And that, but for some reason right now on her IMDb page, the trailer for Consenting Adults is playing. So I'm watching.
Was she in it?
I don't think so.
I think she was, maybe.
Was she?
Because she acts watching... too, right?
Well, she did, I think.
Okay.
Well, now I have to find out.
Yeah,
there she is. She played Kay Otis in Consenting Adults.
Yeah.
Another movie about adultery.
I would say she'd be in director jail, but she's just going to buy her way out of there. Make more weird movies like this. I saw The Exorcist in a theater on 35mm. It was an original print from its 1973 release.
Nice.
And it was cool because I've seen the version you've never seen more times than I have the original theatrical cut. I prefer the theatrical cut.
Okay.
I have never been scared of The Exorcist because I saw Repossessed like 5 times before I saw The Exorcist. So whatever like threat was taken away by the time I watched it. I've always liked The Exorcist, or really liked The Exorcist. I always like, I always get attached more to the Jason Miller stuff.
Well, you're kind of more of a believer guy, right? Like Exorcist believer.
So good. So good. But this is the first time I've ever been kind of scared by The Exorcist. I think it had to do with like the mono sound and the print looked sort of sickly. It wasn't pink.
Okay.
But, it was funny. They were like, this is a rare print. Some of it's pink. And then after the movie was over, it wasn't that pink. So I was like, it was more medium rare.
Nice. And I was
like,
done.
I high fived my friend and like that was it. That was the end of that. But The Exorcist was really cool. I'm glad I got to see it on film because it plays digitally, but it's always like the 2000 re-release.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Very cool. Then real quick, two more.
Yeah.
I watched Crossing Delancey on the first night of Hanukkah because I Googled Jewish movies and I was trying to find stuff that I hadn't seen. So Crossing Delancey like came out in 1988. It was clearly like capitalizing off of the success of Moonstruck. This is more for like Jewish culture than it is for Italian culture, but it's like Amy Irving is getting fixed up with via a matchmaker with Peter Riegert, and she's sort of like used to be in kind of like the Jewish community, but now she's like upwardly mobile to like the book publishing world, and it's Manhattan and stuff. So she gets hooked up with Peter Riegert, who's like a pickle salesman.
Oh, boy.
He's the best part of the movie.
No, he is. I like the movie, but pickle salesman is always a tough pill to swallow when
I
watch
Crossing
Delancey.
American Pickle is pretty good.
I never saw it. No.
It's actually not that bad.
Okay.
But yeah, so I thought it was okay. It was like really weird. It's a movie that feels 1988 in its bones.
Peter Riegert has to be both Danny Aiello and Nicolas Cage in that movie.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Yeah. But there's a part in the movie, and I want people to YouTube this because you can find it on YouTube. Type in Crossing Delancey and Get Your Hands Off Her, because there's this weird like entry point into a scene where we see like Amy Irving is watching public access television. And there's a woman wearing like a fur coat that also has hands on it. She's doing this dance, like a performance artist dance. And then in the background, it just goes, get your hands off her, get your hands off her, get your hands off her, get your hands off her. And then they just like go into the rest of the scene. Yeah. And I'm just like, we're not commenting on get your hands off her.
It's my ringtone.
Yeah. I mean, that would actually be a pretty good ringtone. And then I follow that
only
up
for the person who's like, oh, Crossing Delancey. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, let's hang out.
And then they high five. And then I watched Stepfather 2.
Right.
On the heels of my love of The Stepfather from Scary Movie Month. And Stepfather 2 is not as good, but it's got enough good stuff in it where I still enjoyed it quite a bit.
Jeff Burr, R.I.P.
Terry O'Quinn is just... I've become more of a Terry O'Quinn guy, especially in the past year because of the Stepfather movies. Yeah. And then also, he's in a Tales from the Crypt episode that I've like grown to really like. It shows up on like those marathons quite often. It's like him and... It's a stacked cast in that one. It's like him, Isai Morales, Benicio Del Toro, and Kimberly Williams.
Wow.
Really good.
Yeah.
And I told you this already, but like I haven't said it to the audience. There's a part in the movie where Terry O'Quinn pours like a generic brand of Rice Krispies into a bowl and then pours milk on it and then like leans his ear in to listen to them crisp, and he just has like this big goofy smile on his face, like this is his apex moment. And it's just so great. It's like such a little touch, but I root for his character in a weird way. Like I don't condone any of the violence, but if you would put all that aside, which is a big ask, if you put all that aside, I want him to sort of get his goal. But I don't want it to... like,
you want him to have a family.
I want him to have a family.
You don't want him to murder people.
I kind of want him not to be... like, I want him to get arrested, like, caught for this stuff. Like,
right.
But not until, like, he's in his 70s or 80s.
Right.
Like, I want him to have, like, a run where nobody bothers him, mm-hmm. and he has no reason to go crazy.
Yeah.
But Carolyn Williams will not stop bothering him.
She's a snoop. Yeah.
Meg Foster's in it.
Yeah.
She's always good. Jonathan Brandis is the kid.
Early Brandis.
There's a part where Meg Foster is wearing the wedding dress, and then she just goes, "How do I look?" And Jonathan Brandis goes, "You look cool." And I just think it's so funny that that's something somebody would say to a person in a wedding dress. Anyways, I don't support Terry O'Quinn's character in this movie. I just want to underline that. Anyways, Patrick, that's all I have. Oh, no. There's one more. I'm sorry.
Yeah, do it.
I saw the Renaissance concert. Or Renaissance, colon, a film by Beyonce. I really like Beyonce. She was like my number one crush for a very long time. I really like her music. I wanted to see her concert, but like, I don't know, it's so expensive and I don't want to go to like Soldier Field and stuff like that to see it. So when I heard on the heels of the success of Taylor Swift that Beyonce was going to have a concert movie about Renaissance, I was very excited because I saw the Homecoming concert that she had on Netflix a few years ago, and that was amazing. Renaissance was good in the sense that I got to see snippets of the concert, or sections of the concert, not so much snippets, in a Dolby digital theater. The seats were vibrating a lot. At one point, I felt like I was having a heart attack because it was like very powerful. And the problem with it is that they cut up the concert with documentary stuff.
Right.
And the movie would have been a lot better, I think, if they did the documentary stuff up top and then they just let the concert play through.
Got it.
Or just like, even if it's 2 hours of the 3 hours, just play that 2 hours of the concert.
Yeah.
But like chopping it up, it sucks because like you're really into it and like there's like a string of like 3 or 4 good songs. And then it's just like, let's talk to this backup dancer who like finally feels open to like do his thing because like now he's accepted and stuff like that. And it's like, great. Shut up. I want to watch Beyonce's
concert.
Hey, is
concert. Beyonce around?
Yeah. Or it's just like, I want to call out the do you know how many LED panels are on this stage and all the women who had to like help put it up? And it's not just men on the crew. And it's like, great. Can you shut up and let me watch the concert? And like, I support all of this stuff, but I support it separately.
Awesome.
Separate but equal.
So it's on your top 10 list.
No. No. The Taylor Swift concert movie is a better movie, even though the Beyonce music is better than the Taylor Swift.
Got
movie.
It. Okay.
That's how I fall on it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'll talk about a few things. I saw Are You There? That's Me, Margaret, because I needed to catch up with it for the Chicago Film Critics Association Awards. It got nominated in a couple areas, and I needed to see it. It weirdly was like really good and also exactly the movie I thought it was going to be.
I can totally understand where you're coming from.
It was like, oh, this feels exactly like a Judy Blume book that I never read.
Mm-hmm.
But every beat is like, this is what I assume reading a Judy Blume book is like.
Yeah.
And it's about periods and coming of age and friendship.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams, I thought, was great.
Yeah.
She's really always good. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's so undervalued.
Yep.
I think. I'm trying to remember the movie. I think it was Wedding Crashers. There was a movie where I was like, oh, Rachel McAdams can make any material work. I think it was Wedding Crashers. And I stand by that because I don't think she's ever been bad in a movie. And I don't think she's ever not, even in a, when a movie doesn't work, it's not because of Rachel McAdams. Like Morning Glory is not a great movie.
No.
But like she sells everything that she's in that movie.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame that that wasn't a bigger, like a better movie,
yes.
which led to a bigger deal for her.
Right.
Because, yeah, she should be like headlining movies.
Like, yeah.
But she's great as a supporting actor
sure.
also in these things. Yeah, she's my favorite part of that movie. I liked a lot of the Kathy Bates, Benny Safdie stuff. I think the lead
Kathy
girl,
Bates was really funny.
Yeah, she's really funny. Yeah. I think the and she nails like the Jewish grandmother stuff.
She does a thing where she takes Margaret to temple.
Yeah.
And
oh God, that scene was great.
Yeah. And Margaret doesn't understand what's being said, so she kind of turns to Kathy Bates, and Kathy Bates does this, like, she kind of brushes it off, like, I don't get it either, don't worry about yeah. it. It's so funny.
Yeah, totally. That's how you explain it to every child. Right. It's great. Yeah, like, it's, I thought it was so funny, because I was at a bar mitzvah recently, and, like, kids in my family were next to me, and they're just, like, they'll say, like, open the book to, like, page 62 or something like that. And, like, you'll have the reading in Hebrew, but then you have it, like, phonetically and stuff. But then the rabbi and the cantors usually jump all over the place. So they'll go on, like, runs where they're just like, this verse was too good. I'm going to repeat it three times.
Oh,
and then you're just like, where's my place in this? And
right,
then the kids
right.
were just like, where is this? I'm like, just listen and, like, zone out like I
yeah.
do. Like, it's just like your school plays. Like, everybody zones out.
You have to make sure to watch. You're not invited to my bat mitzvah while you have Netflix.
I should, yeah.
yeah
I got
good.
That and Maestro. I'll do a Jewish double feature.
Maestro.
Oh, did you watch Maestro?
I might have. That is a movie that is not for me.
Okay.
In a lot of ways.
Okay.
Woof. Anyway, so I saw Poor Things,
yeah,
which Rob reviewed for the site. Again, talked about it much more eloquently than I can. I will just say it was an exciting feeling to finally be able to fully love and embrace a Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those where I'm like, I think I like what he's doing, but there's a disconnect. No disconnect here. I think it's really great. I think it's one of my favorite movies of the year. Emma Stone is incredible in it.
Nice.
Mark Ruffalo is hysterically funny. Willem Dafoe rules.
Mm-hmm. Is this his Yorgos Lanthimos' first movie where he likes the lead character?
He definitely likes the lead character. I'm trying to think of his other movies.
That's the vibe I watched, okay. like, the Actors on Actors variety interview. Is like, it's really funny because it's basically just Emma Stone making fun of how pompous Bradley Cooper is. Because, like, there's this one part where Bradley Cooper has his eyes closed, and he's just like, it helps me think. And she's just like, you have to get through that.
I need to watch this because I am not high on Bradley Cooper right now.
She calls him Coopsie Poopsie.
Post Star is Born, I was yeah. very high on Bradley
yeah.
Cooper. I am not high on Bradley Cooper right now,
jeez.
So I need to watch this.
That movie
see.
Must have done a number on you.
It did.
Okay. It's
yeah.
the Netflix of it all. I
yeah.
mean, Todd Haynes aside, and maybe Martin Scorsese, like, a lot of people can't escape the Netflix.
No, they sure
da-dum.
Can't.
So
Poor Things is great. See
yeah.
that when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Satanic Hispanics finally.
Oh, okay.
There's something about modern horror that is frustrating to me right now. And there's still a ton of great modern horror. But like this morning I watched Black Mold.
I haven't heard of it.
It's written and directed by a guy named John Pata, P-A-T-A, who's like out of Wisconsin.
Mm.
And I've talked to him a handful of times. He's a very nice person. It's produced by Jill Gevorgizian. During that brief window when I was trying to like do a festival in Chicago.
Yeah.
That was a movie that I was going after because it had won like the audience award at Panic Fest, and I kind of knew John Pata, so I was like, maybe he'll show his movie in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I knew, it showed up on Tubi as a Tubi original.
Okay.
And he even posted on Facebook, like, are you surprised it's on Tubi? So are we. So I don't know what happened there,
yeah.
but it is currently on Tubi as a Tubi original. I wanted to love it more than I did. Same with Satanic Hispanics. Like every anthology, it's horribly uneven.
No.
There's not really one standout segment that I'm like, oh, they're all okay, except for this one that's great. They're kind of just all okay.
Okay.
And I was disappointed because I wanted to love it.
How many segments is it?
It's four or five.
Oh, okay.
And there's like a wraparound that's not interesting.
Got it.
Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite, like being interviewed by Greg Grunberg.
Ephraim Ramirez?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Not Pedro is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I
was going to say Edgar Ramirez, but that's a different actor.
It is a different actor.
Yeah, that's Bodie.
Oh, that's right. My Bodie, at least.
Yeah.
The last movie I'll talk about I watched just because I knew we were doing this podcast.
Okay.
A little joint called, it showed up in last week's Friday Night Double Features.
Okay.
As the flip side of the Deck the Halls, right? Was it? No, Christmas with the Cranks was in there.
Yeah.
But you name dropped I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Yeah, good movie.
Which is on Disney Plus.
Very good.
So
movie.
I watched it.
Yeah.
It is a movie.
Yeah, it's Zach Morris.
He is very Zach Morris.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not in on the JTT of it all, there's not much there for you. And I never watched Home Improvement, and I didn't grow up with JTT, so his charisma eludes me a little bit.
That's part of what's so good about it. Like, it's like a battle between the audience and, like, a star persona.
Okay.
I find it fascinating, because I have this with Man of the House, too, where I'm just
which I've also never seen.
I'm just like, you're, like, I want to watch everything you're in, but you suck.
Like, as an actor or just, like, as a person in the movie?
I don't think he's a bad actor. I think
he's
really
fine.
I think he's really good at playing guys who suck.
Okay.
Like the kid in Man of the House is a dick. And I understand, like, his plight. You know, he's a son of a divorced mother. And Chevy Chase is trying to hone it. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you have a choice to not be a dick. And, like, he goes the other way. And in I'll Be Home for Christmas, like... The thing that's why I like I'll Be Home for Christmas is because it's like immediately it's just like we're in college and there's lockers.
Yeah, that was weird.
Or there's like and like a kid gets stuffed in the locker.
I feel like 100% that would have blown right over my head had you not pointed it out. Because I was very hyper aware of like what college is this where there's lockers and kids are getting stuffed in them.
Yeah.
And that kid is definitely 14. Like that kid's not in college.
And then there's stuff like I traded in our tickets from New York to like all expense paid resort trip to Cabo. And it's just like it was an even exchange. Let me get this straight. It was an even exchange. And then Gary Cole is like, I'm going to give you a Porsche.
Just talk about stakes you can't relate
to come home for Christmas.
God, I hope he gets home to get that classic Porsche.
And I love how they just yada, yada, yada the thing because the stepmom is just like, isn't that a bribe? And he's just like, Jake's coming home for Christmas. And it's like, and she's just like, no, you didn't answer my question. He's just like, Jake's coming home for Christmas.
They 100% started with the title and worked backwards.
Yeah.
Like, what's a Christmas song we could call a movie? I know. And then what obstacles can we throw in his way to get him home for Christmas?
Yeah.
Jessica Biel.
I watched this movie so many times that, like, when the Ed Man shows up, it's like Fonzie showing up, where I'm just like, oh, great. I'm like, it's my yearly time to hang out with the Ed Man. I'm just like, they're going to Edelberg.
Like, so it's like under 90 minutes, which I appreciated.
Yeah.
But
it's a cool 87.
Don't think I connected to it the way that you do.
No one can. There's five movies that are my bad Christmas movies that like year in, year out, I watch and they've just become a part of me. And it's like this, Jack Frost,
Christmas
with the Cranks, Deck the Halls, Deck the Halls, and Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way.
They're just...
Jingle
wallpaper.
All the Way might be my favorite of that bunch.
I love them. I love them. I wouldn't replace them for anything.
With that, let's get into our Friday night double features. Which one do you want to do first?
So I was thinking about this. I think in anthology format, it makes the most sense to end with a good closer. And should we save the names of the stuff?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. And the movie that we would pick last is a favorite of yours, a first-time watch of mine that I also enjoyed, and I think it ends the show on a high note.
Love it.
Okay.
So we're starting with
the
MGM 1990 double feature.
This is my theme.
Yeah.
But you picked the first movie.
Blue Steel.
From 1990, Catherine Bigelow.
Yep.
And then I paired it with Desperate Hours from 1990.
A decision you lived to regret.
Maybe. Maybe not. I enjoyed seeing it.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Experiencing it. Let's say that.
Yeah. But yeah, so MGM 1990 was the theme. You and I are very fond of MGM and like their affinity for programmers.
Yes.
That's all they cared about was like programmers and movie stars and like washed directors usually.
One of the three trailers,
yeah,
which I watched today,
yeah,
I told myself I will never see that movie.
Okay. Well, there's one movie I know that you have seen,
yes,
of the three.
Yes.
I don't know which one it is.
Okay.
If it's the first trailer or the third trailer.
I don't remember where it fell.
Okay.
In the,
all right,
rotation.
So let's talk about the trailers.
Yeah.
So you usually do the trailers in between the movies, right?
I do.
I do the trailers before the first movie.
Okay.
And then I take a break, and then I watch the second movie.
Okay.
So the first trailer was for Martin Ritz, Stanley and Iris.
Yeah.
Is that the movie you'll never watch?
It's not. I like those two stars, okay, enough. I have no interest in like watching Robert De Niro learn how to read.
Yeah.
But I like the two of them enough, and it was weird watching De Niro just be a normal guy. Like, yeah, I don't know if I can buy this.
Yeah.
But I like him, and I like Jane Fonda, and I would watch the two of them fall in love.
Yeah, I remember Siskel and Ebert did not like this movie.
Yeah,
that was
surprise,
like my biggest memory of it. Also, I kept thinking, I had a thing when I was a kid where, well, two things. I saw, like, I heard the premise on Siskel and Ebert where it's just like, Robert De Niro can't read, Jane Fonda's going to teach him how to read, they're going to fall in love.
Yeah.
And I was like, best picture when? Because I heard just like, I'm like, heavyweight actor can't read?
Right.
Best actor when?
Right.
So, also, I used to think, like, every movie where it was, like, two people's names was, like, a much bigger deal than it was.
Frankie,
I was like,
and Johnny?
Yeah, I was like, Stanley and Iris. The three in particular, Stanley and Iris was one where, okay, I was just like, 100 million easy opening weekend. And then I was like, Dominic and Eugene. I'm just like, I'm like, powerhouse.
Yeah.
Not a dry eye in the auditorium.
Sure.
And then I was like, Homer and Eddie. And I'm just like,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm just like, these are all going to be huge. Homer Oscars and, Eddie, and grosses.
Homer and Eddie also like special needs characters?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if Whoopi is a special needs character. But I think Belushi is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we made choices in the 90s and 80s. So, yeah, it was some year for De Niro because it was like Stanley and Iris, then he had Goodfellas, and then Awakenings.
Okay.
That's a good year.
I still haven't seen Awakenings.
I like it. I haven't seen it in a long time.
I just, because I know what happens, I can't, yeah, watch it.
I have it on a double DVD with The Fisher King, which I've never seen.
I kind of like The Fisher King.
I'll probably do that during break.
Okay.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if this is a nice thing to say, but I did jot this down when I was watching the trailer. I said, can a woman have a sexual relationship with a man she teaches to read? Like, I'm not saying that a woman won't want to have sex with a man who's illiterate, but if she's the one teaching him how to read, doesn't it sort of, like, make you not want to fuck him?
There's all these jokes I want to make, but they're all mean, so I won't, but that was a good line.
Yeah. I think that was the tagline.
Love it.
Yeah. Next trailer.
Yeah.
Quigley Down Under.
Woo!
Which I just saw for the first time at your house.
Yeah.
What was it, for your birthday?
It was, yeah.
That movie's good.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's probably, I mean, I don't, I like Tom Selleck, but I would never go as far as to be like, yeah, Tom Selleck.
No.
But I think that might be my favorite Tom Selleck movie. I like Mr. Baseball.
I've never seen Mr. Baseball.
Three Men and a Baby, I remember being fine.
Yeah, I think it was, like, cute.
I rented An Innocent Man, but I haven't seen it.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen Runaway. Quickly, okay. Down Under is definitely the best.
Yeah.
It kind of rules.
Yeah, Simon Winsor.
Yeah.
Basil Polidori's score.
Amazing score.
Yeah.
You get to hear some of it in the trailer.
Yeah. He gets to reteam for Free Willy with those two.
One of the things I noticed about all three trailers is that they have very, like, on-the-nose voiceover.
Oh, okay.
Which is a lost art in trailers.
Yeah. I miss it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Was Percy Rodriguez any of these three?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. It's not his genre. No. He usually does comedies and horror.
Matthew Quigley.
Yeah.
Stanley is going.
And Iris.
Teach me read.
Giacomo. Oh, Lara San Giacomo, 1990. Yes. Yeah. Pretty Woman and this. That's a good 1990.
She should have blown up way bigger because she's coming off Sex, Lies, and Videotape 1 year earlier.
Yeah.
This is kind of her shot, and it never totally happens. She goes and does TV for a couple of years.
She's
on
Just Shoot
Me.
Yeah.
Which is a good show.
Yeah.
I liked that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just saw her in something, and I don't remember what, so I'll look it up while we talk. But she literally just showed up in something I was watching.
I'm saving a movie for Have You Seen Anything Good Lately on the Holiday Show?
Okay.
Not because it's holiday-themed, but I had too many to talk about on this episode.
Okay.
And Lolita Davidovich was in it, and I was just like, I really like Lolita Davidovich, too. And it's making me mad that they never did, like, a Bad Girls-type movie where they're just like, Lara San Giacomo, Lolita Davidovich. Carla Gugino.
All people I like.
Yeah, exactly. That's
I just saw Davidovich in, aka Mrs. Ron Shelton, right?
Yes.
In Intersection, which I just watched a few weeks ago. It's not great. Apparently, she's on The Santa Clauses, which I haven't watched and will never
Lara San Giacomo?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it was an episode of Barry that I watched that she showed up in.
Yeah.
Because I can't. There's not really a movie that it was. Must have been Barry.
Okay. Yeah. I like her.
She's great.
Yeah, she is. Anything else on Quigley?
Just that I love it and I wish more people saw it and talked about it. It was one of those movies that like I went to on a Sunday afternoon at the Elk Grove because it was $1.50 and I could walk there and I had no interest in it because I'm like, I don't care about Tom Selleck. I don't like Westerns. I don't even know what this title means.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out of it a total convert. I was like, that movie's so entertaining. I loved it. And I've been a fan ever since.
Yeah, it's something I've wanted to watch for a really long time.
Nice.
So I'm happy that I did.
Yeah.
And then the last trailer was The Russia House.
We'll never see it.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I don't know which trailer you watched, but mine was like 3.5 minutes long.
That's the one I watched.
How do they get... they get permission to just be Grindhouse of trailers? Because it is two movies. It's like a John Le Carré movie at the first, and then it turns into the romance angle.
Right.
And then they announce like every cast member, I think, from like Connery down to like the ninth person on the call sheet. Like at a certain point, I'm just like, I don't know who that is.
There were a few where I was like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like John Mahoney, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're not selling me on.
It's bizarre.
I don't remember the name of the
actor. It's bizarre. It also reminded me of how often Michelle Pfeiffer was cast as a romantic interest for old guys.
Yeah.
I wrote down Up Close and Personal, Wolf, Frankie and Johnny, Fabulous Baker Boys. He was 10 years older than her.
Wow.
Russia House.
Yeah.
It got to the point where, like, when she did One Fine Day with Clooney, I was like, she's robbing a cradle. Like, and they were, like, the same age, basically.
When they did announce Roy Scheider in the trailer, I was like, fuck, maybe I will see this. But then they were like, James Fox. And I was like, I'm out. I'm out at Fox.
Yeah, no James Fox. directed by Fred Skepsy, a director I have not seen many movies of, except for Mr. Baseball.
Oh, look at that. The connection.
Yeah.
He made Roxanne.
I don't know if I haven't seen it. When I was aware of the world, like I was probably like 4 or 5 and it was on cable when it was
Cry in the Dark, Plenty, Iceman. I haven't seen many of his movies either
because
I never even saw IQ, even though that came out at like the height of my Meg Ryan crush.
I
tapped out at fucking Mathau as Einstein.
I've got a plan for January that
it involves IQ.
Yeah, it does involve IQ. I have 3 things that I want to accomplish in January.
Okay.
One is I want to see like basically every Meg Ryan movie that I've wanted to see but haven't seen.
Against the Ropes?
That's in there.
Okay.
That's an 04.
DOA?
So IQ, I haven't like seen under good conditions because I wanted to see Demon Knight and got shut out of it and had watch IQ.
Right.
So I was antagonistic.
Not an acceptable substitute.
Yeah, I was very antagonistic.
That's like me watching Maestro today, by the way. I was very antagonistic towards Maestro.
During the interview, Emma Stone refuses to call it Maestro and she just calls it Maestro.
I'm glad she took it
and
seriously.
She's adorable, so she could get away with anything. Yeah, and then Addicted to Love would be in there. DOA would be in there.
Okay.
When a Man Loves a Woman would be in there.
I've never seen that one because
so there's
a
bunch.
Addiction. Okay.
And then I want to watch the Wesley Snipes movies I haven't seen.
Okay.
Like from that 90s run, so like Sugar Hill.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
What's the one Boiling Point?
We'll get to that on the holiday
show. Oh, shit.
Because I had a snap case of that and I broke it out.
Yes.
I don't want to spoil anything. That movie's fucking good.
Oh, shit.
And I did not remember
Davidovich.
It being good.
This is the Davidovich.
Yeah, I did not remember it being good.
No, I don't either.
No. It's because I was 11 and I was expecting Passenger 57.
Yes.
And Boiling Point is like a 1940s noir.
Fuck.
It's good.
Fuck.
Snipes
I gotta watch
is a,
Boiling Point.
Snipes is a weird fit for it, but if it's just a if you just watch it from like the Dennis Hopper stuff,
okay,
it is good.
Fuck.
Yeah,
I'm looking it up. It's not streaming anywhere, so I'm just.
I'll bring my DVD.
Okay,
you can borrow it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I got it from Half Price Books for $2.
Oh my god,
good stuff.
What a find!
I know.
We're still on the Russia House, technically.
We are. Yeah. Oh, and then the other thing I want to do is, tying into this for the Russia House and stuff, I want to do a run of, like, so last year I did a run of, like, 1989 movies I haven't seen before,
okay.
And this year I want to do 1990, so
oh my
God. I have the list here somewhere.
That's going to be glorious.
Yeah, I'll find it in a second, but, like, we can keep talking.
1990 was the best.
1990 was the best.
Yeah. Is that? No, we did... No, yeah, we did 1990, right? During the breast cancer marathon, didn't we do like our favorite movies of 1990?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was really difficult.
Yeah, because there was a lot of good movies.
Okay, here's the 10.
Okay.
Avalon, which I've seen parts of, but it was a long time ago.
Okay, I've never seen
remember.
It.
Wild Orchid.
I love Mickey Rourke. I, for some reason, haven't seen Wild Orchid.
Bad Influence.
Yes.
The Hot Spot.
Yes.
The Grifters.
Fuck yes.
White Palace.
Oh my God.
Memphis Belle.
Yes.
Young Guns 2.
Amazing.
Presumed Innocent.
Fucking yeah.
And Cadillac Man.
Sure.
Cadillac Man.
I enjoy Cadillac Man. Yeah.
So those are my 10. I'm going to do those in January.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
That's a fucking...
It's a good way to kick off the new year. It was really fun when I did with the 89 stuff.
Yeah. That's a good list of movies, man.
Yeah, speaking of good movies.
Speaking of good movies, we kicked off this double feature with Kathryn Bigelow's Blue Steel, which is really good.
Yeah, this is my first time seeing it.
Okay.
Yeah, so you've been a fan of this for a while.
Yeah, like, I wanted to see it when I was a kid. I didn't. I think I like blind bought the DVD and got into it. And then it came in one of those After Dark neo-noir box sets on Blu-ray. And so I've watched it actually a few times in the last year.
Yeah.
Because it's like a pretty crazy movie. Like everything's really, really heightened. But I think the Jamie Lee Curtis character and performance are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing Clancy Brown as like a romantic lead.
Yeah. There's so much to unpack with this movie. First, I want to comment like on the stuff that you were saying, because like Jamie Lee Curtis, I like her and stuff, but like this is one of my favorite Jamie Lee Curtis performances.
Yeah.
And it's different from a lot of stuff we've seen her
definitely
do in other before or after. Clancy Brown is scary as a young man. Like I think age makes him seem like a more approachable man. And he's playing like a cop, and I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, it almost makes more sense if, like, Ron Silver and him switched parts. Although,
yeah, but you'd almost be expecting Clancy Brown to be a psychopath, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, this movie is the Ron Silver show.
it's something.
I did not expect... So, this is what I thought the movie was going to be. I thought it was going to be like not an erotic thriller, but I thought it was going to be something more like Sliver, where okay. it's like, is the guy I'm with lecherous?
Got it.
Or is it this other guy? I thought it was going to be like that. And then you find out like the killer is like, you know, your partner, or it's like the captain or something right. like that. And there's a conspiracy and stuff that is cast aside very early. And I did not think, like, by the end of the movie, it was heightened to the point where I'm like, this is more like important than when Harry Potter faced Voldemort.
Well, because they keep upping the stakes for the last half of this movie,
yeah.
where it turns into, this was really the first time I noticed a weird structural thing where, like, the last half of this movie is just her having run-ins with Ron Silver and him getting away.
Yeah.
And sometimes going back to his apartment to pull bullets out of his body. And I'm like, is no one looking for him there?
That's the thing. It's fucking crazy. The burden of proof that they put on this woman
yes.
to prove that Ron Silver is a bad guy.
Took her gun and started murdering people.
He's just like killing people in hallways
yeah.
and like on the streets.
R.I.P. Elizabeth Peña.
Yeah. There's a few R.I.P.s in this. Ron yeah. Silver is another one. He R.I.P.'d.
Yes. Yeah. But also, I just meant in the movie, but she died in real life.
Yeah,
that's
she died
right.
in real
yeah.
life too. Yeah, I mean, like Ron Silver starts out, just seems like one of Stratton Oakmont's finest. And then we see him after work. Like, you didn't see him on the boat with Jordan Belfort because he was doing something else. No, I just think it's great because, like, I like Ron Silver, but and I've seen him, you know, be a bad guy before, like in Time Cop and stuff like that. But, like, this is just, like, he's full Pacino-ing in this.
Oh, yeah.
It's
big time.
Really, really fun.
Yeah.
He's, like, the most arrestable person that there ever has been in a movie, and nobody will do it.
And because it's 1990, you just get a murderer's row of like character
yeah.
actors who you're happy to see show up in
yeah.
stuff, like Philip Bosco playing her dad.
Yeah. Louise Fletcher
playing her mom. Kevin
yeah.
Dunn shows up, right?
Yeah. Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins, always great as like the mm-hmm. lawyer you call in, because
yeah.
that's what he played for a long time.
Yeah.
Everybody who shows up, even, you know, what's his name? Kurgan, Clancy Brown,
mm-hmm.
You know, wasn't really a name at the time. He'd done Highlander. He'd done Shoot to Kill. He'd done
yeah.
a couple of like movies, but
Tom Sizemore.
Sizemore is
she
Bigelow's
so
guy.
Many times.
I love that. Like,
yeah.
then Bigelow's making Point Break, and she's like, "Give me Sizemore again."
That's one thing that's
I
cool
had this
about
shit in my head for 3 months.
That's one thing about Sizemore.
3 months.
That's kind of cool. Is like
R.I.P. Sizemore.
R.I.P. Sizemore. Obviously, he was a very problematic figure in his real life, but like the best directors are just like the action is the juice. We need Sizemore.
Yeah. Yeah, for
they
sure.
know what's up. And like he always is like it when that studio fair from that time period.
Right.
Like he's so good.
Yeah, no, 90s Sizemore is like he's on fire.
I watched The Relic again not too long ago
yeah.
and it made me just be like, fuck, this is maybe the best he's ever been in a movie.
Yeah, cuz he's given the chance to do something
yeah.
different and be the lead, and he gets that great monologue with a really funny punchline and
yeah.
like, you know, beat the shit out of him. Yeah, he's so good in that movie, and he never really got that opportunity. And then shortly after, I feel like stuff started drying. Well, he does Private Ryan.
Yeah.
But then his personal problems start getting in the way of everything, mm-hmm. and parts start drying up.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I also just love how movies in 1990 looked.
Oh,
I don't,
my God,
I don't
yeah.
know. I mean, obviously they were shot on film, but it was like something else. Like, I don't know if it was like a specific stock of film that was circulating between like this time and that time. But like, for whatever reason, if you watch like Home Alone or if you watch Blue Steel or, you know, anything from 1990, it just looks like that's what a movie looks like.
Right.
It's very like, it has like a real photo realistic kind of quality to it. It just has like a warm hue. It mm-hmm. feels like every movie was shot by Gordon Willis. It's like kind of amazing. So
cinematography peaked in 1990. Let's face it.
It did. Yeah.
I think the movie plays so well even in 2023. In 1990, it's just sort of this thriller about how difficult it can be and scary it can be to be a woman in spaces that are traditionally overrun with men. And it's Kathryn Bigelow telling her own story, basically, of working in Hollywood, you know. But I think it works so well in 2023 is just about the fetishization of gun culture, that like just holding a gun transforms Ron Silver into this fucking maniac.
See, okay, I got a question for you on that. Because like I thought that that was what the movie was going to be, basically. But I think he was just always nuts. And that, like...
But this empowered him.
But, like, no, do you think that he had not shot and killed people before this?
I do not think so.
Okay, because I always just thought that this is, like, his January 1990 project. Like, where he's just like, I didn't know what I was going to do, but then the gun.
Because he's functioning as a human being when he's in that convenience store. He's in a suit.
Well, he
he's
can't go
being a person
wall to wall nuts all the time.
But he does from this point forward. So if he had killed someone before, he'd be running around naked in the streets like he does later in this movie.
He's like, yeah, he's like digging up guns like it's a dog looking for a bone. It's crazy. And then they're just like, not enough to arrest him. And I'm like, what are we talking about?
This was so funny because you had never seen either of these movies. And so watching them in order, I was like, man, Blue Steel is really like overheated and kind of crazy. And I'm like, oh, Desperate Hours is next.
It's the craziest.
Which is some next level bananas shit.
Yeah. Like we've joked about like our imaginary movie theater, the Linderground Cinema Rink. People would be like stumbling out. In a daze after this double feature.
I feel like it would start a fight club.
like that
movie theater in Demons. People would just start punching each other.
I don't even know about that, but I think it would just be sort of like this part of Fight Club where like they just start showing up on the porch and just standing there while nothing's going on. Like even if we weren't showing anything, like I feel like people would just be like standing there like with the promise of the next Blue Steel Desperate Hours double feature.
Yeah, well, once you get a taste, you're hooked.
We're so fucking good at this. No one's better. No one. I'm the fucking Ron Silver of programming. Anyways.
This honestly might actually be my favorite Jamie Lee Curtis performance.
You haven't seen Nora Crank, though, right?
I have seen Nora Crank.
And you put this
I've seen, yeah, I would put this over Nora Crank.
Okay, fine.
I'd put it over Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I love her in stuff like Trading Places, but she's not given a lot to do, you know? I've never seen Mother's Boys, so maybe that would take precedence. But I just really love her in this movie, and it should. She was still a movie star. She was a movie star in the 80s. She would continue to be a movie star in the 90s and 2000s. Mm. But this, like we were just talking about with someone else, Laura San Giacomo maybe, should have bumped her up to like...
Yeah.
Have her own movies for the rest of the 90s, you know? Instead, she's like opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies. And
opposite
like,
Kevin Pollak in House Arrest.
Opposite fucking Mel Gibson in Forever Young.
Oh, yeah.
Around this same time, probably,
right?
That
was 92.
Okay. Yeah. There was another one that I was going to go to, but I don't know what it was.
A special sneak preview, Forever Young. Tell your friends, word of mouth.
But you know, they weren't making, there was only one Kathryn Bigelow at the time. And so they weren't making the right kinds of movies, I think, for Jamie Lee Curtis. So, you know, she could only play second lead or wife, you know, unfortunately, this gives her a really great role and she runs with it.
Yeah. I think this also is like really crystallized that this is my favorite era of Bigelow movies. Like I really like Hurt Locker and I really like Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
Did she do anything else after Zero Dark Thirty? She had
Detroit.
Oh yeah. Detroit's good. That's a drainer, but like,
yes it is.
Yeah. But,
yeah. The run of like Near Dark, Blue Steel, Point Break, Strange Days.
Like if her career was all those four movies.
Yeah.
She would be like, this is going to sound weird. I mean this in a good way. You okay. know how much I like this guy.
Okay.
She would be like 1.5 times Stephen Hopkins.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. The two of them should have collabed.
I agree.
Anyways, yeah, Blue Steel was great. Thank you for programming it so we had a chance to talk about it. And
yeah,
I had a chance to
sure.
see it.
Yeah.
It was like, fuck, man.
It's good.
I also think it's so funny that like one of my best friends in elementary school looked like a beardless Ron Silver.
Whoa.
And I'm just kind of like, I wish I would have saw this movie at the time because I would have been like, you're fucking nuts, dude. And he was so nice and just like normal. And I was just like, you're fucking out of control, bro.
Blue Steel. I'll try to do this for each of the movies that we talk about.
Yep.
Blue Steel currently streaming free on Vudu and Tubi.
Yeah, I watched it on Tubi.
Okay.
Which was kind of a good way to do it because even though there's commercials, every commercial break was like, oh, my God.
What's going to happen when they come
yeah,
back?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, on the last episode of Blue Steel. And I'm just like,
Ron Silver was naked and digging in the park.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis was driving her dad to the police station with a gun to his head.
Yeah. Well, Bill Bosco had it coming.
That guy owns the White Sox.
He also is like nice in most movies,
yes.
So it's so jarring yeah. to be where he's just like
an abusive alcoholic,
yeah,
right? Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah
for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
So we follow that up
with Desperate Hours.
With Desperate Hours,
which I'm embarrassed to say is my first Michael Cimino movie,
first ever.
Yeah,
this is not a place to start.
No, there's other stuff that I've always wanted to see of his. And I don't know why. I just never did.
Okay. I'm going to look up his filmography because I was trying to think of it today just off the top of my yeah. head. And I was like, well, Desperate Hours, while a movie that I enjoy,
no.
is probably his worst movie.
He did some stuff afterwards that I thought would be considered
okay,
worse.
Okay, so I haven't seen... okay, I haven't seen The Sun Chaser. The Sicilian is a fucking bore fest, so The Sicilian is worse.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of like Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, Deer Hunter, yeah. Heaven's Gate, Year of the Dragon, which yeah. I don't even love, but I recognize is probably a better movie than Desperate Hours.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he doesn't have a ton of movies.
No.
Huh.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Cimino.
Yep.
I joked when I recently revisited this movie that it's just about everyone being super hot, which I stand by.
There's a lot of hotties in this.
Yes!
Both in physical appearance and in performance temperature.
Everyone is dialed up in this movie.
At a boil in this one. Wow.
Kathy Lynch is just crying the whole movie.
Yeah, like half the movie, it's like her breasts are half out and she's crying. And
even when she's not in distress, she's in total distress.
Yeah. I really underrated how much I like Kelly Lynch, by
okay.
the way. Because I've seen her in the past few years in like this. I knew I liked her in Roadhouse.
Sure.
But like this, Roadhouse, Drugstore Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
Even Curly Sue. She like runs away with Curly Sue.
I haven't seen Curly Sue since... The Elk Grove Cinema.
It's like a performance that has no business being in Curly Sue. It's
okay.
like that good.
Okay.
So yeah, she's really good. I also like to look at like the movie posters for these movies.
Okay.
Blue Steel has an incredible poster.
For sure.
Desperate Hours has one of the worst posters I've ever seen. It's like maybe as bad as a 2023 poster.
Is it this one that I'm looking at? No,
where he's just
is...
standing outside of a house and it looks like The Exorcist almost?
No, I'm looking at some weird hand-drawn thing where Kelly Lynch is in the background and he's like looking out some blinds. Hold on, I'm trying to turn the computer around because that's
that
not bad.
That is not it. No.
Yeah.
No, that looks like it's from like a pinball machine.
Yeah, it does. The Desperate Hours pinball machine.
People are just yelling at each other. The
I
flippers
finally
are...
tilted on Desperate Hours.
That's the first pinball machine where the flippers hit you.
I got the Elias Koteas bonus ball.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm shooting David Morris.
Why is he in this movie? I don't know.
Yeah. No, go on Google.
Yeah.
Type in Desperate Hours and then type in IMP Awards.
Oh, I know that
yeah.
site.
That
yeah.
site's like where I go to for yeah. like what the posters are.
That's where I always,
yeah.
when I used to always run with just the original movie poster
yeah.
for like heavy action and stuff, that's always where I got
yeah.
it from.
My internet is slow.
Okay.
I'll rip. So we'll keep talking while this
I like
comes
at
up.
The beginning of the, okay, so we got to mention the cast cuz we mentioned the cast, but we didn't mention them by name.
No.
Mickey Rourke. You got Anthony Hopkins pre Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, just like kind of slumming.
Sort of at the nadir of his career up to that point, probably.
I because a year later he's Hannibal Lecter and it's nothing but like prestige shit and bad
nadir
company
means
after
bottom.
That. Right.
That's
right.
For our listeners.
Oh, sorry.
I like to introduce words and tell people what it means. So the Mimi Rogers. God bless America, Mimi Rogers. Then you've got David Morse, Elias Koteas, Kelly Lynch, Lindsay Krause.
Shawnee Smith. The little brother. Who's not anyone.
No. But you know he told all his friends at school that he was in a major motion picture. I don't know. I haven't seen her lately.
I don't know, man. Her IMDb picture is...
She stopped returning my messages.
Not terrible.
Yeah. Well, she looks like... Like if Laura Dern had like a bad sister.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes, like I if absolutely she had
like,
do.
Like if Laura Dern was like a sophomore.
Right.
And Kelly Lynch was a senior.
Yeah.
And then like Laura Dern's just like, I'm in a bit of a pickle. And then Kelly Lynch is like smoking a cigarette and she's just like, I had the whole jar.
You know who else is in this movie? Jerry Bamman.
Who's Jerry Bamman?
Uncle Frank from Home Alone.
Oh, fuck yeah. I forgot about that. Motherfucker gets dropped.
Dean Norris shows
oh,
up
yeah,
in
Dean
a small
Norris.
Role.
Yeah.
I forgot about Lindsay Krause. Like, literally, yeah. I just watched this movie a few weeks ago.
You cannot tell me that Hilary Swank and Logan Lucky is not doing Lindsay Krause in Desperate Hours.
Because I forgot that she existed in this movie, and then I rewatched it today, and I was like, what is she doing?
Lindsay Krause is fucking mammoting all over this movie. Like, she is... atonal to a movie that has no tone.
Yeah, that's, and yet and you almost think like, it's impossible. Yeah,
and yet you're like, this doesn't fit.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And that's insane.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what this movie... No two actors seem to really be giving the same performance.
No.
Mimi Rogers and Kelly Lynch are both sort of doing the same thing in that they're always in distress.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the family, I think, is kind of, well, maybe not Shawnee Smith, but, like, but Mimi Rogers and Anthony Hopkins are in the same movie.
Okay.
Mickey Rourke is in his own movie.
Yes.
Kelly Lynch is trying to be in the Mickey Rourke movie.
Right.
Elias Koteas and David Morse are sort of, like, where do you need us? Lindsay Krause is, you're under arrest, sugar.
supposedly,
yeah, okay,
there's a much longer cut of this movie.
Yeah, I think I read
mangled
that.
By editors, which was sort of the Michael Cimino way.
Yeah,
at the time, I would be interested in seeing a longer cut. I refuse to believe it's a lot better. Only because, like, does it have the same score? Then it's not a lot better. I say this as someone who enjoys this movie.
The score I wrote down at one point, I don't agree with it the whole way through, but at one point I wrote, this is the score of a 1970s TV movie.
It's fucking crazy, score.
Some of it is like, this is the score of The Boy in the Plastic Bubble.
It's David Mansfield who wrote the score, and there's so much of it.
Yeah.
And again, like the performances, it's so over the top, it's so overheated, it's used in every scene, and you're just like, surely we need a break from feeling something.
Yeah.
But we're not given one in Desperate Hours.
No. I like how just fucking amped Shawnee Smith is.
Yes.
Like, there's a part where David Morse slams her stereo on the ground and stomps on it, and she just like runs at him like it doesn't matter that her family's hostages, like that's a bridge too far, like I don't care if I'm gonna die like Butch and Sundance,
right.
You're not gonna be able to get away unscathed for crushing my radio. It's something. Mickey Rourke, on his way out of the courthouse at the beginning of the movie, just for good measure, kicks a dude in the nuts.
Yeah, he sure does.
For no reason. He's running.
Well, that guy was maybe going to get in his way.
No, he wasn't even like...
It's a precautionary nut kick.
No, it was like almost not precautionary. It was almost like the guy was like facing right. Rourke was going straight ahead. Rourke was just like, hold on, this guy might get in my way, pulls him into his way, kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah. That's what's great about this movie. It pulls you into its way and kicks you in the nuts.
That was the tagline.
I wanted to see this movie so bad in 1990.
Yeah.
Because I liked Mickey Rourke. I didn't know the rest of the people, but I knew that Casey Jones was in it. And I was like, I got to see the next movie that Casey Jones did.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good in this movie. Like, he's fine, you know? Like, I don't think he's not good as over the top as everyone else.
Good year for Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
Ninja Turtles, yeah. Desperate Hours, Look Who's Talking To.
I forget that he was in Look Who's Talking To, but he's the one who like sets the apartment on fire.
Sure, I need to rewatch.
There's
Look
an apartment fire, a house fire, something starts on fire. I haven't seen it since 1990.
For some reason, I think like every scene in the Look Who's Talking sequels involves like an apartment fire. Like, it would make just as much sense. I wrote that the wallpaper in the house of Mimi Rogers and Anthony Hopkins, for some reason, looks like a Disney World Little Mermaid restaurant.
Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
Good set dressing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that. This also is like the little boy. Like, so I mentioned, like, Shawnee Smith, like, gives more of a shit about her stereo than about her family being held hostage, it seems. When the little boy comes in, doesn't even realize that like his family's under duress. He just sees two guys hulking over him.
Right.
He like left the Nintendo on all day. Like, he presses a button to turn the TV on. The game is ready to go.
That's because David Morse was already playing Punch Out.
Was he?
No.
Did I miss this?
No.
Okay.
No.
And then like, yeah, he's giving him strategy and stuff like that. And I'm just like, play it through. Let me see this through.
Logistically, like Blue Steel, it's kind of insane how they manage to keep the people in this house the whole time. They're letting people come and go. Like,
there's so many logic
leaves. And maybe this is one of those things that, like, it was badly edited. And so now we watch it and we're like, wait, they all should have escaped by now and Mickey Rourke shouldn't have noticed.
Yeah. There's a lot of logic gaps.
It makes no sense
if
you're trying to, like,
it's like they let Anthony Hopkins go, and then they're just like, we're going to kill you if you don't come back with the money and don't tell anybody. But, like, nobody's watching him.
Right.
So, like, you could come back with the money and tell somebody. And just say, like, hey, they told me nobody but me, so maybe make yourself scarce. But then at the end of the movie, like, the entire U.S. Army is outside.
Led by Lindsey Crouse.
Led by Lindsey Crouse. Shooting up the house. David Morse gets shot more times than Sonny Corleone. Yet he only has one gun and he's hundreds feet away.
Yeah.
Hundreds feet. He's hundred. This is what Desperate Hours does for me.
So what you're saying is it's a great movie.
It is a great movie. Yes. I think it's cool. I mean, it was fun. I had a good time watching it. I think it's also funny that when they show Lindsey Crouse's command center, it's inside kind of like a warehouse.
Yeah.
And they all have like giant turtle posters of everybody, but like Mickey Rourke is making like Blue Steel face, and
it's
like
the only face he
but
made.
But they also have like giant turtle posters of like the family that's hostage too. It's like really, that made me laugh so hard. I was
this
like,
kind of ends the Mickey Rourke run that I love, because by the time we get to like Wild Orchid, well, he does like Harley Davidson the next year, but he's very openly miserable in that movie.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, and has complained about it for years.
Is Don Johnson having a good time in that, at least?
He's trying.
Okay.
He might be miserable because he's working opposite Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
But he's at least trying.
Yeah.
But like 80s Mickey Rourke I love, and this is kind of the end of the honeymoon for me.
Yeah. So on that note, I did have a F Mary kill.
Okay.
These are Mickey Rourke performances, mostly of 80s and early 90s.
Oh, love it.
Okay, so I've got four different groupings of three.
Okay.
Okay, so the first one is FMK, Wild Orchid, 9 1/2 Weeks, and Body Heat.
So I've never seen Wild Orchid, so I'm going to kill it.
Okay.
I'm going to, I guess, F 9.5 weeks and marry Body Heat because I think he's great in that movie.
Okay. So you're doing Mickey Rourke performances
yeah.
in these movies. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, good.
That's, is that what I'm supposed to do?
That's more interesting.
Oh, so
I'm,
okay.
I'm good with that. Okay.
Was I supposed to do the movie?
You had a choice either way. I did not designate which.
My ranking remains the same.
Okay. All right. Number two, you've got Year of the Dragon.
Okay.
Johnny Handsome.
Okay.
And Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Oh, shit. All right. So, again, I'll do the movies. I'm going to kill Year of the Dragon, F Johnny Handsome, marry Harley Davidson.
Okay. All right. Number three, you got Angel Heart.
Yeah.
White Sands.
Yeah.
And Desperate Hours.
I enjoy Desperate Hours. I have to kill it in this case.
Okay.
And I have to F White Sands and marry Angel Heart, of course, because I'm... fucking love that movie.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then last but not least, Barfly, Diner, and Pope of Greenwich Village.
I'm going to marry Pope of Greenwich Village, kill Barfly because I've never seen it, and marry Diner. No, okay. F Diner. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Also, why is Shawnee crying at the end of the movie?
Why is anyone crying in this movie? They're all always crying.
I mean, like, I get maybe she's just like, it's over, I'm feeling hysterical. But then she, like, looks at Mickey Rourke, so you specifically think, like, she's sad that he's gone.
Maybe something got cut out.
Maybe, like, this, I had the time of my life, and now it's over?
Ebert and Siskel's worst of 1990 show.
Okay.
But I wanted to read the other movies to you that they reviewed on the same episode.
Of other worst of 90s?
No.
Oh,
so when they first reviewed it
okay.
in 1990, for yeah. anyone who's doubting that 1990 was an awesome year,
okay.
here are the other movies, and then you can rank them.
Oh, okay.
Pacific Heights.
Yeah.
King of New York.
Yeah.
Miller's Crossing.
Okay.
Texasville.
I haven't seen Miller's Crossing or Texasville.
Okay.
Why isn't that on my 1990 list?
I don't know.
Anyway, and I love Last Picture Show, so I should see that too.
I thought you might say that.
What?
So I have this for you.
Oh my god. This was a setup.
It was.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man, he gave me a 7 movie collection of Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It's got Blown Away, Fabulous Baker Boys, Rancho Deluxe, Stay Hungry, Texasville, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, directed by Michael Cimino, and Wild Bill, which I've watched 10 minutes of. Turned off. No, I can't wait. So thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. Texasville's good.
So I got something that's kind of like an opposite of this gift that you gave me. So I have to replace one of your gifts for the holiday show.
Uh-oh.
Because I bought a shower set themed to Jurassic Park. And it's like Berry Dino shampoo.
Okay.
And Berry Dino body wash.
Ah.
And I looked at it and when I brought it home and I was just like, I want a berry shower. So I used it. And I had a very good time. And, like, it has, like, one of those, like, the loofah thing.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, a T-Rex on it. And
of course.
Like, it hangs on your shower. It's the whole thing. I smell like...
It belongs in your house.
I smell like Richard Attenborough.
Spared no expense.
Yeah, I spared no expense. $5. So I got to replace that gift. Anyways. Yeah. No, thank you.
That's yeah, great. Sure. Now you can see Texasville.
Of the two... Pacific Heights or King of New York. I like both of them. I was expecting to have my mind blown by King of New York, and I just thought that it was good.
Okay.
Although I liked some stuff in it a lot, like David Caruso especially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Snipes.
Yeah, yeah, and Snipes. And I just really like Pacific Heights. I think it's just very overcooked, like Desperate Hours.
Yes,
it's fun.
It is. Yeah. 1990, man.
Yeah, it's good Modine. Good losing his shit Modine. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
That's apparently streaming on Vudu as well, and I'm going to give it a rewatch because I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it really badly in 1990 because this was right after Batman.
Sure. And what's Keaton going to do next? What?
Yeah.
Terrorize a yuppie couple?
Mm-hmm.
Refuse to move out?
It would have been great if his partner in crime was Michael Goff.
I agree.
He's just like locking him outside.
What's the disease he has in Batman and Robin?
McGregor syndrome.
Thank you. Somehow I knew you would know.
Mm-hmm. He's like, goodbye, old man. Yeah.
Next double feature?
Yeah. Next right. double feature. So, it was... This notebook is tapped, by the way. I started a new notebook.
Nice.
Yeah. I hope nobody finds this, because they're going to think I'm Kevin Spacey in Seven. But they're just like, it's all about movies, but it's rambling. anyways. So our double feature was a Genesis Rodriguez career retrospective.
Yes.
Career celebration.
More so.
Yeah.
I think she could come out for this, too. I don't. She doesn't have a ton going on.
Yeah, I'm surprised she's not here for the podcast. Because, yeah, she. I'm not saying it dried up. But where has she been lately?
Right, exactly.
So we did trailers for What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Woof.
Tusk and Run All Night.
Yeah.
So I gotta say, the What to Expect When You're Expecting trailer, I want to jump out of a window after I saw that.
I've seen the movie.
Oh my God. Is I don't the movie remember better the... than the trailer?
No.
How is that possible?
No. The trailer's real, real bad. You do get one quick glimpse of G-Rod because...
She's sitting on a couch.
Yeah, she's like Anna Kendrick's roommate or some shit.
Does she have anything to do in the movie?
Oh, my God, I don't remember. Okay. It's been 10 years. Yeah. But I'm guessing no.
Yeah.
But holy shit, what a bad trailer for a movie that seems terrible. And in what that came out in like the wake of He's Just Not That Into You.
There had to have been like why it
how
exists.
Do we turn this nonfiction advice guide into a
if
a,
that movie hit, then it would probably be like Men Are From Mars, Women right from
exactly
Venus, the movie.
Yeah. Woof.
Yikes. I noticed that this is also another Elizabeth Banks collaboration for Genesis Rodriguez.
Interesting.
Also another Rodrigo Santoro collaboration for Genesis Rodriguez.
She works with a lot of the same people, I guess.
The section of the What to Expect When You're Expecting trailer with the dudes group.
Woof.
Made me want to drink poison. Like, it made me want to sterilize myself. Like, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, yikes. I gotta say, there's almost nothing I dislike. You know how we talked about, like, oh, MGM 90. Like,
yeah,
so
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
There's almost nothing I like less, movie-wise, than Green Band Lionsgate movies.
I could see that. Lionsgate, you know, they tried to kind of take over for New Line, I feel like, in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And they were definitely keeping, like, theatrical action alive. They were keeping some horror alive. But, man, they also have a lot of shit.
They have a lot of, like, just four-quadrant
direct. Yeah, 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 for sure.
Yikes. Directed by Kirk Jones of My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 fame.
Oh, wow.
He leveled up? Question mark? Yeah.
Yeah, that movie sucks. Yeah. And the trailer sucks.
Yeah.
Much better trailer for a movie I don't remember that well, even though I watched it for something F This Movie related, is the trailer for Run All Night, which made me want to rewatch it. I know you're a fan, and
it's
the trailer
a good movie.
Sells a pretty kick-ass premise.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool shit in the trailer. I was like, I don't remember this movie that well, but I definitely want to see it.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times. We watched it for, I think, Heavy Action All-Stars 2.
Okay, that sounds right.
But yeah, I've seen it twice and liked it both times. It's a good Jaime Colette Serra.
Yeah,
Before
he went corporate.
Yeah, it's probably the best of the post-Taken Neeson movies for me.
Yeah, I still haven't seen the one where he's like the snowplow driver.
I haven't seen that one either. Yeah, Genesis Rodriguez is just on wife duty in this movie.
Yeah.
She's the
Joel Kinnaman's
wife.
Beleaguered wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Silent wife.
Right.
And
not a good use.
No.
Of G-Rod.
This is also another G-Rod collaboration with Ed Harris.
What is going on?
In the trailer, they play, oh, damn.
Oh, that
boy.
Part I could have done
I'm just
without.
Like, yikes.
Get it? Nights. Everyone's Irish.
And one thing that I noticed.
Toy, run all night.
One thing I noticed.
You're going to run all night, lad.
When I meet Warwick Davis at Days of the Dead, should I just start singing Oh Danny Boy and yeah. see if he threw, if and then throw shoes at
him? He has to shine.
He has to shine. So one thing I was wondering, based off of the evidence of this in John Wick Chapter 2, is Common only a good actor as an assassin?
He's great in Smoking Aces.
Wasn't he also kind of like a shooty guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So everybody was in Smoking Aces.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Including Alicia Keys.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
And at one point, he like carries her down some stairs, and I'm like, I just want to watch this movie where these two fall in love and do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that era of Carnahan.
Era. Yeah, me too.
I wasn't a big narc guy, but Smoking Aces and The Gray are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Anywho, and then Tusk was the last trailer.
Finally, letting Genesis Rodriguez do some fucking acting.
Yeah.
She starts out as like Justin Long's girlfriend, and mm-hmm. it's kind of a thankless role. And then halfway through the movie, she gets this amazing monologue.
What was it about?
Wanting to break up with him, okay. basically, because yeah. spoilers for Tusk, she's like seeing Haley Joel Osment on the side.
She's secondhand lioning Justin Long. I was waiting for hours for that one.
What a lucky Haley Joel.
I love that dude's late career.
Yeah, right?
So just being a doofus.
But and I like Tusk, but watching the trailer, the whole thing about like, I save it for my podcast. I was like, has any movie ever mm-hmm. shown podcasters in a favorable light?
No.
No. But, and maybe that's as it should be.
I never am offended by any of that.
Oh, no, I don't take it personally, but I just think it's funny that it's like this thing that people shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
I don't know. It's like the essence of vanity, which it is. And I'm glad to be a part of it. I tried rewatching Tusk, I think. Maybe it was during Scary Movie Month or like a year or two ago. But I remember like being one of the few people who really liked Johnny Depp in that movie.
Okay.
Like I thought like that was really like whatever joke he was going for, I thought was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just kind of have like a weird, like ambivalent feel about like, I have that also because like next year I'm going to rewatch Secret Window because it's a 2004 and I really liked that movie. And then, like, when I rewatched Pirates of the Caribbean this year, I was just like, can I like this outside of this? And it's weird.
Sure.
Anyways. So, yeah. But it also made this trailer also made me want to revisit Yoga Hosers.
I don't know if I can recommend it.
I've seen it.
Said as, no, I know. Yeah. But I don't know if I recommend revisiting it. Which I say as someone who kind of likes Yoga Hosers.
Yeah, you wrote an article about how you liked Yoga Hosers.
Yeah. I like that Kevin Smith made this movie so that his daughter and her friend could, like, play in a band and fight little sausages and whatever. But, like, it doesn't totally work as a movie.
Genesis Rodriguez was in Yoga Hosers, too. Mm-hmm. What was her part in that?
She's, like, a gym teacher.
Oh.
She has, like, two scenes in an office.
I gotta watch it. Gym teacher office?
She's doing kind of a weird accent.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm in.
So before we get into the movies, I did a power ranking of favorite Genesises.
Okay.
So number five is Project Genesis from Star Trek 2.
Okay. Surprisingly low, but I guess it is going to destroy the universe, so it makes sense.
Yeah. Number four is the Book of Genesis.
Okay.
Never read it, but no, I'm sure. Either. I've heard it's got good reviews.
Amazon. Good reads.
Yeah. Number three is Genesis the Band.
Okay, I figured they would show up somewhere.
Number two is Genesis Rodriguez.
It's a little low.
And number one is Sega Genesis.
I'd put G-Rod at one.
If she were in the room with me, I wouldn't be thinking of
Sonic
the Hedgehog.
She's on her way.
If Sonic the Hedgehog was in the room with me, I might be thinking of Genesis Rodriguez. So I take it back. I'm flipping the order.
All right, good. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, so our first movie was The Last Stand.
Yes.
Which I didn't even remember she was in.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
And was that your pick?
I picked that, okay. And then you programmed the rest.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I love The Last Stand.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being very wary of it in 2013 because this was Schwarzenegger's first movie kind of back after being governor.
Yeah.
He'd done some Expendables movies, but this was the first, like, Arnie movie.
Yep.
It was Kim Ji-woon making his American debut. And
only
I was
American
like,
movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And that didn't always go well, you know, when international action directors would make their American debuts. Sometimes it's great. It's not always. But man, I thought it was the perfect vehicle for him. I love that he embraced his age. I love the line about, like, you make us immigrants look bad. Like, it's the first time I could think of in a movie where he acknowledges being an immigrant.
Yeah.
Besides, like, Hercules from New York or something, you know. I love the action. Admittedly, it's like 20 minutes. It's from like 60 minutes to minute 80, basically, the siege on the town where the action is just incredible.
Yeah.
And then there's another 20 minutes and you're like, well, I don't know if I need all this, but
the problem is I think the lead villain is a little bit of a wet blanket.
Yeah.
I wish they had like a actor that brought a little bit more to it.
Sure.
Yeah.
He spends most of the time driving fast in a car with Genesis Rodriguez in the car with him.
Yeah.
I think it's a great modern Western.
Yeah, I loved it in theaters. I hadn't seen it since theaters.
Oh, okay.
And it was weird because at the beginning I was just like, this is kind of taking longer to get going than I remembered.
Yeah.
On the first viewing. I think if it were me, I maybe would have cut back a little bit on the Forrest Whitaker stuff because I think the real good stuff is obviously the stuff with the sheriff and his deputies and the siege on the town.
Yes.
So like every time Forrest Whitaker's character comes, and I like Forrest Whitaker normally, but like every time he comes around, I'm just like, I'm like ready to move to the next scene. But yeah, it's, I think I'll go as far to say as it's definitely the best of the most recent Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Unquestionably.
But I think it's his best movie since T2.
You're probably not wrong. Because I think the only other contenders might be like Eraser and True Lies.
Yeah, and I'll take those. I'll take
The Last Stand. I would probably take The Last Stand over those as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but I agree with you. Like, there's not many movies that use him in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so charming, and I love his interplay with the deputies, and I love his interplay with, like, the townspeople. Like, I like when the old lady blows away that henchman, and then he just says, like, Mrs. Obliged. Salazar, obliged.
Which they should have left it at that,
yeah.
But then instead the old lady gets to, like, give him hell, sheriff.
Yeah.
And it's not funny.
No.
But obliged is a great punchline.
Old ladies are, like, 90% as funny as they think they are. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed. Agreed.
All the time, in general.
Just stop trying, old ladies.
Blanket statement.
The Last Stand also overestimates my investment in Jerry.
Oh, Zach Guilford?
Yes.
Who I know by name because he is the beau of Alexa, the wannabe beau of Alexis Bledel in the great film Postgres.
Oh, wow. See, when I saw The Last Stand, I had no idea who he was.
Yeah.
And now I know him from his Mike Flanagan stuff.
Oh,
and
is he
from,
in Mike Flanagan
yeah,
stuff?
He was in Midnight Mass, and he was just in Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah.
And he's in The Purge Anarchy opposite his wife, Keely Sanchez.
Isn't that somebody you know?
To say I know her is unfair, but I went to school with her.
Zach Guilford, I think, grew up around here.
So they met here?
Probably.
And then they went out to Hollywood together?
Hand in hand?
I don't know. I'm looking up Zach Guilford.
Or maybe they met at
for
Spago.
For the first time.
And we're like talking about the Woodfield Mall.
He's from Evanston.
Okay, yeah.
And he's been married to Keely Sanchez since 2012.
Yeah. She's like,
shit.
Yeah.
He went to Northwestern? Wow. Asshole. Sorry. They started dating in 2010.
Okay.
When they met on the TV pilot for Matadors.
Sure.
I don't know. And then they starred in The Purge Anarchy after that.
Okay.
Huh. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. The family who purges together stays together.
I like him more now than I did when I saw this in 2013 because I know who he is and I have some affection for him as an actor. Mm-hmm. In 2013, I was like, who is this generic white kid who gets killed and I'm supposed to give a shit?
See, I give a shit because he's like...
He's like the best of us.
Like when Newman, when Newman gets killed in U.S. Marshals.
Well, okay.
It's like...
But Newman you've been with for two movies, right?
Our little angel.
Yeah.
It's like, did you check that door for heat?
It is very much a did you check that door for heat yeah. situation.
You know how much I love the Gedrick archetype. Yeah.
Total Gedrick.
Guilford gives good Gedrick. That's like my cops do it by the book shirt.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He would be on this show if he wasn't doing Mike Flanagan shit.
Yeah, totally. You could talk to him and I'll talk to Genesis Rodriguez.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I played this all wrong.
You walked into that one. I really like Jamie Alexander in this movie.
Sure.
It makes me wish that I knew her from other stuff other than Thor.
Yeah.
And then she did that Tattoo Cop show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
I think that's the last TV show I remember on network TV.
You might be right.
Like, there's streaming shows that I've heard of.
Sure.
But, like, if you ask me, like, what was the last show to air on network television? I'm like, Tattoo Cop.
Tattoo Cop.
No, it's called Tattoo Cop Show.
They've rebooted every show from when we were kids. And I'm just now finding out, like, oh, we're on season 5 of the Magnum PI reboot. And
yeah,
I'm like,
Jay
wait,
Hernandez.
What?
At least that's, like, showing me proof of life of Jay Hernandez.
I guess,
so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned that section from like 60 to 80 minutes where there's just like some great carnage.
Yes.
Like there's a dude who gets shot in half by a Gatling gun.
Amazing.
There's a dude who gets shot with a flare, runs 10 steps and then explodes.
Evaporates. Johnny Knoxville seems to be having fun in this movie. Schwarzenegger surfs a guy off of a roof and shoots him in the head on the way down.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
There's some really good Kim Ji-woon
yes.
levels of mayhem in this. It makes me wish he did more American-made movies. But because I've never heard anybody talking about his stuff after he went back to making films in Korea. Like,
well,
I saw The Devil was talked about a lot.
Amazing
and
movie.
And it's a great movie.
Yeah.
And then The Last Stand, obviously. Because,
also which, amazing.
Which is really good. But yeah, after that, I don't know. He kind of was like...
I'm looking up the title of one that I saw that like left no impression on me. Because there were kind of three major filmmakers that seemed to be coming out of Korea around the same time. It was Kim Ji-woon, Bong Joon-ho, and Park Chan-wook.
Yep.
And I put all my chips in on Kim Ji-woon because I was such an I Saw the Devil fan, and then The Last Stand came out. I'm like, see, I was fucking right!
Yeah.
And then I saw like his first movie back, and it's a fucking bummer. Hold on. He has a new movie called Cobweb, but not the Cobweb that we watched that I haven't seen. The Age of Shadows, it's called.
Okay.
And it's not anything to write home about. Got I was it. Like so let down because it's a big fucking wet fart of a movie and I was really bummed out.
That's too bad.
So I'm looking forward to Cobweb and hoping it's a return to form.
Did that come out this year?
It's from 2023, but I don't think it's played in the States yet. I think it's played some festivals and possibly opened in Korea, but I don't think it's opened here yet.
Do you know what genre it is?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah. I miss the guy.
Me too.
Yeah.
It says... described as an experimental and genre-defying drama shot entirely on sound stages in support of a film within a film narrative.
Kid had a dog villain in him?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't think anybody's going to be getting shot in half in cobwebs, and the world is lesser for it.
During, I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but when I saw It's a Wonderful Life over the weekend,
yeah,
you know the scene where, like, Jimmy Stewart goes home to, like, the dilapidated house, and it's all set up to look like, you know, like their honeymoon and everything?
Yeah.
I so wanted Donna Reed just to be, like, ready to get big laid, kid.
She should have. Better movie.
She didn't.
Damn it.
Yeah, she's Cisco's hee-haw. Anyways. Yeah, this was a bummer because it was maybe a bomb at the box office.
Yeah.
And I really wanted this one to hit because for some reason during, like, that first few months, or first 2 months of 2013, you had a new Schwarzenegger action movie, you had a new Stallone action movie with Bullet to the Head, and then you had the new Bruce Willis with Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah.
And all of them did not make any type of impression financially. And if they did, then I feel like that could have been like a second wind for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, I just think that kind of action movie is out of fashion now, which is too bad. And I appreciate that Schwarzenegger came back with a movie that's very old-fashioned because it's positioning him certainly as sort of the 80s action icon. But the story surrounding him is, like, from the 50s. I mean, they're doing, like, a real fucking old-fashioned Western.
Totally, yeah.
And that's what's great about it, but it probably doomed it at the box office. I overestimated how excited people would be to see Schwarzenegger come back, because I was so excited. I was like, surely everybody feels this way, right?
Yeah, people have short memories.
They were not into it, and now these guys can only make Expendables movies.
Yeah.
That's the only genre. And I think those are done now, right?
They have.
Because
they have.
Not only is Expendables 4 the worst movie of the year, but it lost a shit ton of money.
Yeah, I'd have to double check the list, but I can't imagine anything being worse than Expendables 4.
Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah. Peter Stormare's in this.
Doing something.
I guess, like, have you ever heard his natural speaking voice?
I think so.
Like, nobody can sound more suspicious than Peter Stormare. It's like a gift.
And we just call on him to play, like, any type of European. Like, you need a Swedish guy? Sure. Need a Russian? Sure. Yeah. Need the devil? Yeah, Peter Stormare will play him.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. He's got, like, that great... He's, like, somehow found that spot where you're equally annoyed to see him and cackling because you're excited to see him.
Sure.
It's weird.
And he's, like, trying to do a cowboy voice at times in this movie, and it's something.
Yeah, it sounds like a man speaking when he doesn't have a tongue. It's something's happening. I don't know how Harry Dean Stanton didn't actually die by how he dies in this movie. Like, that looks real, and that looks like an onset accident. Like, maybe we had, like, a Dave Storm, like, Harry Dean Stanton for the last few years, like, and that was who was in Lucky, and, like, that's how Harry Dean Stanton really went out. That's one thing I also think is amazing, is I didn't know this at the time, but every once in a while, I'll just be, like, scrolling on Twitter or whatever, and it's just like, did you know Harry Dean Stanton had a long relationship with Rebecca De Mornay? Did you know he had a long relationship with, like, Jennifer Connelly? And I'm just like, what is happening?
Must have been some charming motherfucking pig.
Exactly. Yeah. Johnny Knoxville, I think, is such a fun element to add into these action movies.
Yeah.
Because it's like his, I'll just call them the Hey Ray performances, because, like, every scene he's just like, and he does this in Walking Tall, he's just like, hey Ray, you want to hear some crazy shit? I named my guns girls' names. And it's just like, he's just game for anything.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'll kill three bad guys, but let me get my football helmet. And it's just like, yes, give me more crazy motherfuckers like this.
Again, he's sort of a...
They weaponized Knoxville.
Yeah, literally. Definitely. I probably enjoy him more in Walking Tall because I feel like he fits in a little bit more in that movie.
This movie
seems to add him in. He's, like, maybe a little too wacky
for
the tone of the movie, but they need him because he's the guy that has all the weapons.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
I love in Walking Tall when Kevin Duran does kind of like a... to him, like with like his face, and then they just laugh at him. It's really funny. It's really, really funny.
Genesis Rodriguez, kind of forgettable in this movie, which is a shame because it should be a real holy shit, who is that?
Yeah.
And it's not. Because all she does is sit in a car handcuffed and get pushed out.
And she's secret bad guy. Right. But they don't give her any like fun villain stuff to do.
No.
All that happens is Forrest Whitaker's just like, Swiss bank accounts ain't that secret. I got you.
Check the financials on everybody, including me.
I always preferred Super Nintendo. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Oh, dear.
Anyways.
But we do get
some
great Genesis.
Hold on. I got one last
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Stand. I love the lazy diner people. Mm-hmm. I love that he's just like, there's a shootout coming. Leave or get down. And they're just like, I just ordered breakfast. And then they're like, I'm going to die soon anyways. I live for breakfast. And I'm just like, as a breakfast guy who goes to diners, I'm kind of like, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you're going to die, you might as well have your omelet.
His answer is like, just stay away from the windows. Like, he doesn't actually try to evacuate
them.
Great.
Yeah.
It is great. There's a lot of like great touches like that. Again, I wish, I don't mind the old lady whooping out the shotgun and shooting the guy. I just wish they hadn't given her the stupid line, because obliged is such a great punchline for that moment.
Right. Exactly.
But speaking of great Genesis Rodriguez, we do get it in Man on a Ledge.
Her big screen debut.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It is.
Well, then why does she not get...
Yeah, exactly.
This seems like the part she would have
I think it's just because people didn't really see Man on a Ledge.
No, they definitely didn't.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Boy, did I.
Yeah.
Asger Leth's Man on a Ledge.
Are you speaking backwards? What's Asger Leth?
He's the director.
Oh.
Asger Leth.
I thought I lost you for a second.
Wow, yeah, he hasn't made a ton of stuff. He worked with Lars von Trier on The Five Obstructions. But he makes Man on a Ledge, which I go see in 2012. High on Sam Worthington from Avatar,
because
I had recently fallen in love with Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Paper in his wallet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And Man on a Ledge is like this great little engine designed just to entertain. Mm-hmm. And every actor that shows up is someone you love seeing in a movie. And there's so many of them in this movie. I mean, with the exception of Jamie Bell. who's fine in the movie, but he's never somebody that I'm like, ooh, Jamie Bell.
Most of the cast acts like they were tricked into being in a Sidney Lumet movie. And Sam Worthington is just like, I'm not going to tell him.
I grew my mullet out for this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but yeah, they're like, is just good, chewy, Charles Durning-esque New York-y performances in this movie.
This movie has a William Sadler to burn.
It does. I got to ask you a question about William Sadler.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say the ending, but I'm going to kind of say something about something that happens at the end.
Okay.
Which of the two jobs is his real job?
I think it's the last one we see him do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, did he get the job as the valet just for this purpose?
I think so.
So
that's
like,
my impression, that he's like, in on the whole thing.
So it's like Dan from Blockbuster who got a job just until he had enough money to buy an Xbox and then he quit?
100%.
All right.
Should have saved up for a Genesis. Where does Terminator Genesis rank in that?
It's not in the top five, I'll tell you that much.
No. Nor should it be. I forgot to mention The Last Stand is streaming on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. Man on a Ledge.
I watched it on Prime.
Okay, so it's on Prime. And it's on Hulu, and it's on Freevee, so you don't even need a subscription to watch.
They're bending over backwards to give you a gift.
Right? This movie is, like, Elizabeth Banks needs, like, I love that the cop is Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah.
Because if this movie had been made 5 years prior, it would have been a man.
Yeah.
And I like that it's not. Mm. And there's not a ton of lip service paid to, like, you're a woman and you're not respected, but there's enough.
Yeah.
And then
she doesn't Lindsay Krause it up.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And then they give her fucking Eddie Burns to bounce off of.
That's a good bounce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a fucking casual, like, Eddie Burns, not a dirty cop, but not totally into this whole thing.
I'll put, like, those two in my burn bank.
Oh, yes.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Titus Welliver being a bad guy, Anthony Mackie being a buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's smart about Man on a Ledge, and the reason why I like it so much, is not just because of the cast being so good and the action being a lot of fun, but because it bounces around so much that, like, you never get sick of any one little plot line. Like, we're out on the ledge with Worthington, and Worthington, I think, is good in this movie.
Yeah, he's good.
He's
a solid anchor.
Yeah, I think, again, America overestimated his ability to carry a movie. I think he can carry a movie of this size, but he's not asked to carry it because we're surrounding him. Yeah. We surround him with all these great actors. But if we get sick of him and Elizabeth Banks on the ledge, we can bounce inside the room to Eddie Burns. And then we go downstairs to the vault where Genesis Rodriguez and Jamie Bell are trying to break in. And that's, like, the stuff that stretches credibility the most, that they're just, like, randoms who've learned how to do all this shit. As they go.
The only issue with those scenes is that once I see Genesis Rodriguez, I don't know what's happening anymore, because all I am doing is, it's like, you are the prototype. I think I'm in love.
Why did she not blow up? Like, just based on this movie, why does she go? Kevin Smith uses her to good effect in Tusk. But, like, from here, she goes to riding in the car in The Last Stand, to Thankless Wife in Run All Night. Apparently, she was on that Netflix show, The Umbrella Academy, which maybe I need to watch now just to get a Genesis fix.
Yeah.
This is one of those holy shit, who is that movies.
I think it's she came along at the wrong time, because this was sort of around the time where they just stopped knowing how to make movie stars.
Yeah.
And everything kind of was just like this amorphous blob of, is this streaming content? Is this whatever? So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's strange too, because, like, if you see her, I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe, but, like, maybe they cast her in Last Stand off of Man on a Ledge.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see her in Man on a Ledge, why don't you give her the Jamie Alexander part?
100%.
You know, like, she can do a lot more.
Right.
Anyways, I watched a music video she was in today.
Oh.
It's by Romeo Santos.
Should I watch it?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
It's called Hero Favorito.
Okay.
But she looks amazing in it.
Then I'll watch it.
And it ends with her doing a Spider-Man kiss on a guy.
Sounds like something I'll watch.
Yeah. It's not it's not greatly executed.
Okay.
But, I mean,
it's something.
It's nice. She's really good. I like that Eddie Burns is just Eddie Burns all the time.
All the time.
Where he's just like, what a crazy day.
Woodman, done it again.
Yeah. Woodman, done it. Midnight in Paris. Woodman's done it again. He's just like, I had to go back twice for Scoop.
Double scoops.
Woodman. Done it again.
I got double scoops.
Yeah.
Double scoops.
Fucking save it for next week. Double scoops.
The movie has Akira Sedgwick to burn.
Yeah,
she's just a reporter.
Yeah, she doesn't have a lot to do, but it's always nice to see her.
I think she's playing her character from Gamer.
Oh, okay. I don't remember Gamer too well.
Oh, you should rewatch Gamer. Okay. I'm the only person in the world that likes Gamer.
This movie would be a good double feature with Phone Booth.
Okay. I could see that.
Better Whitaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Than Last Stand.
He's just like, hey, what are you doing in that phone booth?
Colin Farrell's all like, oi, toy, 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 toy. I've got to run all night, laddie.
He's just like, Katie Holmes, Rada Mitchell, that is a predicament. I empathize with your case.
Not since Dinklage was torn between Tomei and Hathaway. Yeah. Did we have such a burning hot love triangle.
Yeah. And Anne Hathaway was like, I'm having none of this situation.
No, the movie should have been called None of That.
Yeah. Ed Harris makes me nervous. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, for a long time, I liked Ed Harris in movies. I still do, like, in, like, 80s, 90s stuff.
Well, he kind of only plays a heavy now.
This is true. Maybe that's the reason. But, like, he just immediately gives me, like, agita every time I see him.
Because,
like, there's no line anymore between his real anger and his performance.
That's exactly what it is. You feel like if you went to introduce yourself to him, he would freak out at you for being in his eye line.
Yeah.
Like, he just seems like a guy who loses his shit and suffers no fools.
He has my favorite line delivery in this movie.
This movie, what is it?
When he goes,
get that man on a ledge.
No, he says something. It's offensive. It's not nice. But he refers to somebody as a chihuahua. But he goes, chihuahua. Like the way he says it, he's like, chihuahua.
He's fucking referring to Genesis.
I know. I was going to say that.
Why is he calling her a chihuahua? She's the most beautiful chihuahua I've ever seen.
Could you be the most beautiful girl in the world? Oh, beautiful, beautiful, plain to see. You're the reason that we made Friday Night Double Features.
She is. Like, we fucking devoted a whole night to her.
Yeah.
Where else in America are they doing that?
I don't know. If I'm Sam Worthington and I went through all that shit, I'm stealing my boyfriend's girlfriend.
100%.
My boyfriend's girlfriend. My brother's girlfriend.
100%.
Yeah. Didn't Mark Duplass direct My Boyfriend's Girlfriend?
That sounds right.
Or is it Your Sister's Sister?
He's in it. Did he direct it? Maybe Jay Duplass directed it. I don't know. I saw it. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm. Friday Night Duplass feature.
We're watching Baghead and the Puffy Chair.
Crowds, not big.
Every time I'm at Half Price Books, I like pull out Baghead and push it back in.
Love it. I like it a lot. Okay.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the elephant in the room.
Oh, shit.
He jumps off the 21st floor of the building and lands on a bag and somehow rolls off of the bag immediately.
And one
then
stops him.
A foot chase.
He gets away.
You can't do that.
I know.
Like, that's some shoot 'em up fucking crank shit.
That's when I said that the Jamie Bell Genesis stuff strains credibility the most. It's kind of that strains credibility the most.
I wasn't expecting what happens with Jamie Bell and Genesis Rodriguez in the last scene. Like, I didn't feel like that's where the movie was building with their
interesting
relationship.
Okay.
I didn't mind it because I love, but like at the same time.
And her reaction is so good.
Yeah. Well, anything she does is good.
It is. She's really good in this movie. And again, they are just like fun, kind of teasing each other. Like, they are, you know, for lack of a better term, the comic relief in the movie.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that they exist only to be funny. They're not these obnoxious goofballs that, like, the movie cuts to every time we need a yuck. But their storyline is lighter than the rest of the movie, which is not heavy at all. This is, like, featherweight Sidney Lumet.
it's like Inside Man.
Maybe even Inside Man has, maybe, like, loftier ambitions. Yeah,
there is some stuff, like, subtextually.
Yes. There is not in Man on a Ledge. It's just fun.
Yeah. At the end, it's like Sadler's just like, da 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 da. It's like just, Chelsea Dagger. Like, they're all like,
Ed Harris stole this diamond from the Nazis.
Yeah. I like how at the end, it's basically like, when everything goes right today, we'll meet at the bar at 6 and we'll watch your story on the news.
The plan
worked. We'll just
party
it up. Yeah. It's a fun movie.
It is.
I love the last shot, too, where it's just like, I went through a lot of stuff today, and now I got a girlfriend.
Right?
It's like, it's cool.
And then they're just like, to the next step. And then the Clash plays, and you're just like, that was so fucking fun.
And Elizabeth Banks has wonderful hair.
Yes.
It's like Pantene Pro V.
Right? And she woke up like that. She's all hungover.
Yeah.
Man.
Good to have those problems.
Really enjoy this movie.
Yeah, I don't look like that until I get on my Jurassic Park berry shampoo.
I remember putting this on my, when we do our underrated overrated show, this was one of my underrated picks for 2012.
Yeah.
And I've been every few years beating a drum for it.
Yeah.
It's not one that I go hard on like Quigley Down Under, mm-hmm. but...
Sorry, all I heard was beating hard on.
All I heard was Genesis Rodriguez, and so I started beating hard on.
I thought it was just like when Ed Harris beats you, he gets hard on.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's the only way he gets hard anymore is by beating the shit out of someone.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a scary guy.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that, like, he comes back and does, like, bonus features for the Creepshow Blu-ray, you know?
Oh, I forgot
like,
that he did that.
Right, or Knight Riders, or yeah. whatever. He, like, is loyal to George Romero, and that will make me love him forever.
Yeah. I like, things. I don't remember what I was going to say. I don't remember.
Which double feature did you like better?
I definitely liked... Okay. Here's the thing.
Three of the four movies you'd never seen.
This is true.
That's exciting.
Okay. All right. We last time we did also like a ranking of our favorite to fourth most favorite.
That would be really hard to do.
So we'll do that. Okay. I'm going to do that next.
Okay.
But my answer is I think Last Stand and Man on a Ledge are better movies. Are good. Both good movies. Whereas the other one, it's like Blue Steel's awesome. And Desperate Hours is like a chore, but also like a chore that halfway through you love doing.
Right, right, right.
I think the more satisfying, impactful experience is Blue Steel, Desperate Hours.
Interesting. Okay.
Like that's the one where like if I wanted to show everybody what a great programmer I am, I'm showing them that.
It's a good accident. Like we kind of stumbled into that.
Yeah.
In terms of the heightened sensibilities of both movies.
Yeah.
Maybe that was just in the water at MGM in 1990.
Yeah, I mean, like, I picked that because it was, they were both crime movies. And right. also I wanted to see Desperate Hours at some point. Yeah. And I'm like, I'll double it with Blue Steel, which
I also
haven't
seen.
You don't
want to double Blue Steel with Stanley and Iris. That would make no sense.
No.
unless Jane Fonda shoots a guy in a convenience store in the movie, at the beginning of the movie, and then spends the rest of the movie going crazy. Doing naked push-ups.
Knowing how crazy Blue Steel goes, I would have easily bought that Ron Silver needed Jamie Lee Curtis to teach him how to read also. He's just like, I'm going to kill your whole family unless you teach me how to read. And they're just like, how long is this going to take? He's just like, I'm not leaving until I know how to read. She's like, oh my God, how much of the alphabet do you know? Not much.
I think I would pick the other double feature, the G-Rod double.
Yeah.
Because I think that would just be a fucking awesome night at the movies.
Yeah. I don't think you could go wrong with either of them.
No, you really can't. Yeah. This is one of our stronger double doubles.
This is true. So I'll rank
Dane
my
Dane Cook isn't in any of them, so...
Remember how hard we went on Clerks too? Yeah, yeah.
On My Best Friend's Girl, we were like, this fucking movie works.
Please, it was Employee of the Month.
Oh, fuck, sorry, that's what I meant.
Oh my God.
I pictured the right movie in my head, like the cover art, but I said the wrong title.
Yeah.
Employee of the Month, Lionsgate?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Every once in a while.
I bite my tongue. So I'll go for favorite to least favorite of the four. I'm going to go favorite is Blue Steel, then The Last Stand, then Man on the Ledge, then Desperate Hours.
I think Blue Steel is awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go Last Stand, Man on a Ledge, Blue Steel, Desperate Hours.
Got it.
In terms of like what I want to watch.
As long as Desperate Hours is four, I don't think you're wrong in any order.
100% agree.
Yeah.
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 It has to be fourth.
Yeah. But it's a fun, bad movie.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, is that it?
Yeah, this is a short show, huh?
It was a very brief 2:15.
Okay, so. Nice.
But thank you, Adam, for doing this.
No, this
is always
is
a fun show to do.
Yeah, I love looking forward to this. I
hate doing
this.
It, but I love the anticipation of it.
I look forward to this every year. And also, it's sort of like, I don't ever think of when we're writing Friday Night Double Features of like, well, I got to make this a thing where like, I know that I could maybe watch it for the show.
I don't either.
I never do that. So So it's always like a treat when we're just like, okay, it's time to do that.
Right.
And then we have to look back and stuff of like seeing it. So I almost picked, Coming to America, Ed Wood, and I'm really glad that I didn't do that because what are you going to say about those?
Right.
They're really good.
I almost picked Armored Wrath of Man or Den of Thieves Wrath of Man.
It's Den of Thieves Wrath of Man.
That's too much movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of movie.
It's great. And again, you'd have a great night at the movies, but it's too much movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is exciting because this is kind of our warm-up to the holiday show, which is coming up in just a few short weeks.
Yes.
I don't know what the weeks in between are going to be, but I'll figure that shit out. The
holiday show's next week.
Is it really?
Yeah, isn't it? Because if we...
Is it seriously next week already?
We go out...
I thought we...
No, because today... This will drop on December 13th. So December 20th would be the holiday show.
Oh my gosh, it's next week already. I thought we had like two more shows to do.
Do you have to rewatch all those movies or did you watch them recently enough where you don't...
No, I rewatched them, okay. So I should be okay. Right. There's a few that I'll familiarize. Yeah. familiarize my... Listen, we couldn't make it to the end of the show without me hitting the fucking microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Next week is the holiday show.
Yeah. I have a song.
I gotta fucking learn it.
You don't have to.
No, I looked today. I didn't try it, but I looked and I was like, well, that seems easy enough.
Yeah.
So hopefully
I
will get to take part in the song this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of good stuff coming.
Yeah. It's going to be a great show. Mm-hmm. So make sure you listen in next week for the holiday show. And then we're already into our underrated, overrated, best horror of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually have to figure out another show until like mid-January, so that's great.
That's how it is with like reserve seating. Like it's all themed stuff, so we've got like Lumps of Coal coming up. Although we're doing something different, we're doing a new theme with like Sneak and Stay, which is in a couple weeks.
Okay.
That is like when you go to you went in the newspaper in the 90s and it says, come to the sneak preview and then stay as our guest for So we're doing House Guest and the Santa Claus.
I've never seen the Santa Claus.
Okay.
But it made me so happy to see Casey Wilson say that working with Tim Allen was a fucking nightmare.
Tim Allen confirms everything I suspected.
Sucks.
Like, he's one of those actors like Seagal where I can't divorce the movies that I like of his. But yeah, he's no good.
All right, I'm trying to think.
The business awards are coming next week. Our great performances article's coming.
Oh my god, I gotta think of those. Yeah. Somehow this is all creeping up on me. Yeah. To me, it's the first week of December, and we have like a whole month.
Yeah. No, I'm way aware of it because all this month has been is just like a blur of movies, holiday celebrations, and work. Like, I don't have a spare moment for anything.
Sorry.
It's not a problem, but... After the holiday show, I'm just like, yay, I get like a little bit of a reprieve.
Right.
But no, I'm putting pressure on myself. I'm like, that's when you watch Christmas movies for a week. And then after that, I'm just like, that's when you watch the top 10 stuff.
Ugh.
There's no rest.
Stupid top 10. I have like 8 pretty locked in right now.
I have my 10 set.
Okay.
The number 10 keeps rotating
between
a couple movies. But I put one in there today and I felt pretty good about it.
Oh.
But it's probably going to fall out because I'm hoping that Poor Things takes its spot.
That's really the only thing left. But that's the way I don't like watching movies.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder if this will be in my top 10. I don't know.
Yeah. And I kind of have some hopes for Godzilla Minus One,
mm-hmm.
which I want to get in. But I'm not a big like Godzilla guy, so I'm guessing maybe I'll like it, but not love it.
Top 10 love it.
So we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. I was going to say something about the holiday show or Sneak and Stay. Oh, I was trying to think of like, I definitely did that. Like, I went to Sleepless in Seattle and stayed for something, but I can't remember what. What would I have stayed for?
That's a good question. I don't know. Sleepless in Seattle was the sneak preview for sure. Or was it the movie you stayed for?
I feel like it was the sneak preview, but maybe it was the movie I stayed for. Okay. One was Jurassic Park, like that you could stay for.
Oh, that was Heart and Souls in Jurassic Park.
I went to that one.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that, but I saw that ad.
I did that thing you do Independence Day.
The one that I always remember is Father of the Bride, Beauty and the Beast.
Interesting.
Didn't
go to that one.
I know I saw one that was The Babe and Beethoven.
Never saw that one.
There's others.
What?
House Guest Santa Claus I'm looking forward to because I haven't seen House Guest in a really long time.
House Guest was a Disney movie?
Yeah. But it's Sinbad Phil Hartman.
Oh, I'm thinking of House Sitter.
Oh. Oh, God. No wonder. I did not like House Sitter.
Sleepless in... I know you guys want us to let you go, but you can turn this off at any time.
Yeah, if you want to.
Double feature.
Speaking of which, because it's apropos for the moment, if you are looking for a good song, listen to Before I Let You Go by Blackstreet. Very good.
Is Genesis Rodriguez in the video?
I wish. It came out in like 94, so no.
So she was a fucking
She was a baby.
She was a baby Genesis.
A baby Genesis.
All that's coming up is movies that Sleepless in Seattle is a double feature on for like DVD.
Okay. I'm sure I can find it if I look it up on my newspaper site. I will let you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that because I remember going to Woodfield 3 and 4, but I don't remember what it was like. Stay and see this. It would have had to have been like a TriStar movie, but I can't think of what it would have been.
Yeah, Columbia or TriStar or something like that. Yeah, I can't remember what else they had.
Oh, well, anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening. Go to fthismovie.com every day for more cool movie shit. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. New shows every Wednesday. New reserve seating every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Patreon, patreon.com/fthismovie. We haven't recorded this month's show yet, but as I said last week, I'm trying to get Erica to do Eyes Wide Shut with me.
Nice.
If we can find the time to watch a 2.5-hour movie and record a 60-minute podcast, which is not easy in December, everyone. I hope you appreciate that Adam and I watched 4 movies for this fucking podcast.
And we're watching 6 for next week.
Oh, my God.
On top of all my due diligence for the other stuff where I'm like, whoa, it's 6 movies for this. Well, I still have to watch the 8 for what have you seen anything good lately? And I've got 3 of those done.
Oh, my God.
I watched the Hallmark Hanukkah movie last night, but we'll save that for next week.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will see you next week for the holiday show. I feel like I could say this without hurting anybody's feelings. It's my favorite show to do all year.
Yeah, it's my favorite show to do all year, too. And I'll give you a little clue of what it is.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.